Wow. John Sukup really laid down the knowledge. We powered through a bunch of viewer live questions from the live stream on the YouTube. This replay is well worth the listen. If you have any interest in Active Target, Mega 360 Live, sonar, any of that kind of stuff, electronics in general, battery power, and troll motor, all that stuff, this is well worth the listen. We cover so much ground in such amount of time. I hope you guys get a ton of value out of this as much as I did. Enjoyed the episode. And if you guys are enjoying these podcasts, if you can leave a review, a thumbs up, or anything that would really help out the podcast, it's much appreciated. But let's get into the episode and let you guys help catch more fish and suck less. This week, the Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast is brought to you by Arsenal Fishing. Arsenal Fishing offers premium custom-made performance apparel and tackle. Arsenal delivers a wide variety of custom-designed baits, accessories, and tools, along with unique utilitarian apparel for all outdoor enthusiasts. As part of their support, you can use code HELLEBASS15 to save 15% on all purchases at arsenalfishing.com to support the show. Now let's get back to helping you catch more bass and suck less. All right, here we are. Hellebass Live on a Thursday night special edition. Due to youth daughters hockey games in the district playoffs on Wednesday night, we moved it to Thursday night. And luckily, John's schedule aligned and we were able to make this thing happen. And a show I've been looking forward to, kind of excited for a while. We got John Sukup, the hookup Sukup from the Bass Tank. What's going on, John?
You got my attention at youth girls hockey. I just want to know if they throw down the fights in the youth girls hockey, if they're allowed to That's do a slap pump. Fest or no.
Fighting isn't really allowed till you get to like the minors and the pros, right? Like really? They don't really allow fighting in college or high school or even anything like that. That doesn't propagate its way down in the youth. Girls aren't even really, they're kind of allowed to check a little bit, but like if you like really like line somebody up in the, like, yesterday, a couple of our girls, you know, they like to play a little more on the aggressive side, but they got called for some checking penalties last night. So, but my daughter, she wears the goalie pads and just lets people shoot pucks at her for fun. So she's, yeah. What's there you go. Rusty says the best customer service ever, the Bass Tank. So,
that's cool.
Just checking in there. Was the audio and the video good for everybody? I think it is. It sounds good to me. So, what's up, Sycamore? Got your package today. We might take a look at that later. Lots of people. Tom Mix. Lots of regulars coming in, piling in here. Awesome. Well, cool. We're just going to – I've got a few things to ask John about tonight. We'll tell a few stories, but we'll definitely, you know, as we get into it, try to answer people's questions. But obviously, you know, there's – we'll answer what we can and John will answer what he can, but some of the stuff is really specific and you need to actually like troubleshoot it. But we'll try to keep out of the weeds of like, oh, I'm getting interference. Like that's not the kind of stuff, but we can talk about the pros and cons of Humminbird versus Active Target and when 360 versus live. And what do we think of the new LVS 34 plus transducer, all that kind of stuff would be fair game for sure. Yeah. Get ready to mop up some juice. Taylor's excited. That's right. Happy St. Patty's Day, everybody.
Yeah.
I can see you're wearing about as much green as I am today. but I did turn the green LEDs on behind me. So there we go. So we'll come back to this. We don't want to get right into it. I'll star this one. We'll come back to this one, Rusty. shocked at the day one results. I think he's probably asking about Santé Cooper. I don't know. Did you look at
the results?
I'm not shocked, I guess. I think, you know, a low 30 was about 32 pounds that Drew Cook, right, came in with. That doesn't surprise me. And I forgot to look at what the cut weight was, but I feel like a 17-pound bag was a pretty pedestrian bag today.
I think the 50th place was like 15-10 or something like that.
15 and a half is Josh Douglas's first guy out, Mark Frazier's first guy in. So that's about what I thought. I mean, if anything, if the weather would have been maybe a little better, it might have been a little more high-end weights. Like, they're definitely not on the pace they were that when Preston Clark won, right? Like, I don't think we're going to see six century belts because there's six guys on pace, technically, but I don't think they're all going to keep that pace. So, but it's still a good tournament. I mean, I think there's a good shot. You got one guy at 31, almost 32, another guy at just a few ounces shy of 30, so...
pretty good chance somebody gets a century belt this week.
I'm going to say it's going to happen.
Nice. It's been a while, right?
Yeah, it has been.
I guess, well,
Lee Livesey,
and then
Walters.
Patrick Walters. And then I think Brandon Cobb. So it's been a while since we haven't had one on Lake Fork. How about that?
Yeah. So. Everybody that I know that lives down that area, and I mean, the guys in the NPFL, they're begging the ownership group, go to Santa Cooper. And I mean, I've heard everybody that's around there say it's got to be one of the number one lakes in the nation right now. So
yeah,
that's what I hear.
That's always been a bucket like list for me, like a place that I'd like to, I don't know,
right.
I feel like be fun to fish, cool fishery, really unique fishery. There's a lot of things on it and the chance for like really big bass. I'll check all the buckets for me as far as like a destination lake.
Yeah, and it looks fishy. Like, you know, it just reminds you of an old Bassmaster magazine, right? Like everything, right. Everywhere you look, there's a fish, a target to hit or something.
So it kind of looks like the Wachita River, but there's actually giants in it.
Yeah.
I guess I want to, before we forget, I always like to take care of a little business here. I want to make sure we thank Arsenal Fishing for supporting the channel and the stream. As always, you guys can check out all their apparel, tools, and things like that at arsenalfishing.com and use the codes down at the bottom of the screen. More about that later, but just want to make sure we get that in there. Sycamore, you zeroed off the dock today. That's a bummer, but you got out. That's important. So let's just throw it back while we're getting people rolling in here. I guess our history kind of goes back a ways. Like we were just talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
We met, I believe it was 2014. We were partners, neighbors in the boatyard, yeah. However you want to say it. I was gonna say boat mm-hmm. buddy. That sounds a little weird.
Yeah, we were boat buddies.
And we parked right next to each other. You kind of just get randomly thrown in the boatyard by your number. And I don't remember who was on the other side of me for the life of me. I think Paul Mueller was like a few boats down. But I remember you, and, you know, obviously we got to basically, you know, see each other every morning and afternoon coming in for, I don't know, 5-6 days in a row. So we got, you know, talking, learned, met each other. So that's where it started. I don't know. What do you remember about, you know, running into that Yankee next to you and that Triton back then?
I remember after every day of practice and every day of tournament, there being less and less boats in the boatyard. I think there was like 15 lower units ripped off or something that, I don't think I'm exaggerating either. I really think out of 50 boats or how many ever we had, like there was a third of the field that, you know, and I thought that you also had some damage on your boat. I know both sides of me, both boats were missing at one point. I know that.
I want to say, I think we only had two official days of practice.
Yeah.
Something like that. And the first day of practice, right at the end, I ran all the way up the spillway. I had been mapping it out. I was there for pre-practice. Thought I had Darbone Bayou down pat. And I had a moment lapse of judgment, distracted, lost focus for like a fraction of a second. And the next thing I know, I was coming off playing on the top of some stumps in the S-curves and ripped a gash in my dad's Triton. It was probably 4 feet long. Right down to the fiberglass. I mean, you could see it. Like, it was, like, exposed, that kind of brown, yellowish fiberglass. Like, and it was no joke. It was massive.
Yeah. I think the most memorable part of that whole event was the third day we had a major, major fog. There wasn't a delay. We took off in the fog, but it got worse and worse progressively. And when I cut into Darbone Bayou, you know, there's like a 15-minute idle or 10-minute idle. And, you know, it was so thick, I was scared to death to go any further. I was shaking just being there. And so I just pulled in and fished. And then after about an hour, the sun came up. And all of a sudden, you start looking around. There's like 20 boats in there that all had the same thought. Like, we didn't even know we were fishing next to each other. The fog was so thick. But what was more memorable about that whole thing is when it was all said and done, I went back and looked at some of the pictures. And from that morning, there was pictures of Cardone.
Colby?
Cardone. Yeah. And he was up. Sorry, Grant Cardone. It's Cardone, right? That was his last name.
Colby, something like that. Carden. Colby Carden. Yeah.
Carden. Okay. Sorry. And he was all the way up at the dam.
Yep.
Fishing the spillway. He had ran that whole thing off of GPS through that fog. And honestly, man, I've been back a half a dozen times for crappie tournaments, and I've been all through that. There's just no way I would ever do that. That was crazy. And then it didn't even pay off. I think, you know, he didn't even end up winning, right?
I think I don't think he won, but I think he did hold on to make the classic, though.
Right.
I think he was actually down there this year, and he was leading after 2 days. And so him and I were. He was the only guy that beat me to the spillway on day one. That place is just something, you know, it's honestly a super cool tournament venue. It's very dynamic. If it had a little bit bigger and higher quantity of bass, it would be an amazing tournament fishery, but just the changes and the ebbs and flows and where they'll bite one day and not the other. And, you know, the not easy to get in and out. It's a pretty cool tournament fishery. It really challenges the anglers, which is cool. But yeah, so I was one of the boats that was missing because on the second day of practice, I rode with a youth director from Ohio that took me out in his Ranger, which I was afraid to go anywhere in his boat and like mess it up. So we kind of played it easy. And then, but yeah, my dad's boat was getting patched and then it came back just in time for the tournament day. And I just like had to trust that they put a good patch on it, I guess. But,
Those national championships, man, they've definitely the Bass Nation from the state level, the regional level, to the national championships, the couple that I had fished in the past, they definitely were stepping stones to get, you know, where I'm at now. Not only myself, but I mean, a lot of guys, you know, every time I've been, there's a half a dozen guys that end up, you know, making it pretty far, you know, bigger names, you know?
Yeah.
Like you said, Paul Mueller was in that one.
Yeah. Paul Mueller made it in that one. And then I ran into you at the mega regional with Panger at Gunnersville. So that was cool. So yeah, Albert Collins, I'm sure we're missing out like a bunch, but just think of the ones that were like fish tournaments that I've fished. So yeah. Dak says he's thinking about about ready to get live scope. He's been looking at the bass tank. So what's the best reason to purchase your live scope from the bass tank?
I mean, the best reason is if you've watched any tournament lately, you're going to see a Bass Tank boat leading the tournament. And what people don't know is you actually have to buy from the Bass Tank to actually catch fish that way. So that's the number one. If the proof's in the pudding, just check out any tournament. I'm just kidding. So, man, it's our knowledge. It's our tech support. Like, you're going to call and you're not going to get somebody that's a sales rep that's just there to clock in and clock out. You're talking to real fishermen that compete on a high level with it, that are actually intellectual and can explain to you exactly what you're looking at. If you have any questions, whether it's install wise or whether it's how to use it, you can call us back and we'll help you out. If you install with us, then, you know, my partner's an engineer, so we've got the best, you know, mechanic shop technician and backed by an engineer that there is in the nation. We've built the company around forward shooting sonar, so there is no other company out there that has that same niche as us. So those are the number one reasons. If you're buying from out of state, it's free shipping, no tax, unless there's a tax law in your state that says we have to charge for that. And then it's also, we have actually have financing available. And beyond that, all that stuff, even if all prices were equal, at the moment, if you want to buy a bundle, there is no better price to buy a bundle. If you're wanting like a 9 or 10 inch, 12 inch unit, there is no better price to get a bundle than what the Bass Tank has at this time.
There you go. Awesome.
There's the sales pitch.
There you go. Daniel and SmackDown, I see the member chats, but for some reason, those like monthly member chats, I can't see in StreamYard, so I can't put them up on the screen, but I do appreciate them. And I do appreciate you guys using your special chats there. The guys watching on YouTube can see them. So located, it's Oklahoma, right? Where in Oklahoma?
Sepulpa, which is Tulsa. Suburb of Tulsa. Yeah,
I don't think you guys travel to install, but you have a lot of people that travel to you to install, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Cool. Let's see here. So I don't want to forget to mention that John has recently dipped his toes into the YouTube game because he's glutton for punishment and likes, you know, makes his life even more difficult than it already is. So, it should be down in the description is the hookup with Sookup, right? And what made you decide to jump in the YouTube game, John? Or add it on to any of your other many layers, right? Like,
yeah, so the growth in you know, my personal fishing career has got to the point where I feel like I've got a lot of sponsors that are taking really good care of me, and I want to do the same in return and take care of them. And I get asked a whole lot of questions a lot of times. I used to be able to take a lot of people out. We used to do, like, free training for customers and stuff. We don't have the bandwidth to do that anymore. So now we do training, you know. So it's another way of exposing kind of the things that we're doing and be able to talk about, you know, like, for instance, we're going to have a LiveScope Plus video any minute, like probably Sunday night or something, dropping, just so we can put some content out there that nobody else can at this time. You know what I mean? So that's the main reason is to take care of, you know, take care of the sponsors though.
Right.
And like I said, and to answer all the questions, we get a lot of questions. And like too many to respond to, really. There's too many. So once I get kind of a bunch of those questions come in, we'll give us an idea, spark an idea to do a video on it. And, you know,
how do you decide what you put on the Bass Tank YouTube channel versus your personal YouTube channel? Or what's the difference? Or what would people like? If you're looking for this, go to the Bass Tank. If you're looking for this, go to Hook Up with Sookup.
Well, so the Bass Tank YouTube channel right now is probably more of an extension of our social media at the moment. It is going to change to where we're working on content. So as we've shot content for my personal, we're also shooting and doing some things for the Bass Tank that hasn't actually dropped yet. So the Bass Tank content is going to shift a little bit more towards a lot more of like your settings and like how to utilize it to catch fish and things of that nature, you know, very descriptive on the electronic side. Mine, you know, we talk a little bit about the electronics as it fits perfectly, but I just in general talk more about like the things that are going on in my life in the fishing world, answer standard fishing questions. I kind of dial it back away from just hardcore only electronics. Now you may see me using electronics to catch the fish, but you know, we're talking more about the fish behavior. I talk a lot more on my YouTube about, because it's so heavily people, you know, think that just because you have or decent at electronics, that it means that's the only reason I'm catching fish. And it's just not the truth at all. Like you have to understand how a fish thinks to be able to read your electronics, you know, correctly to be able to make it repeatable and pattern the fish and catch them multiple days. And so I do a lot of that in my videos. We go to a lot of, before tournament season started, we were going to a lot of lakes and not even practicing. And like during the day, I would explain, you know, what my thought processes are, what the fish are doing, how the fish are responding, what I'm seeing on the water, you know, whether I'm catching them or not, how I'm adjusting. And then, you know, typically by the end of the day, we'd get into some fish. So you kind of walk through that whole process. I do the same thing on the tournament side of my tournament videos is I go really in depth throughout my practice and do the tournament the best I can. To talk to, you know, the viewers and explain to them what my thoughts are and why I'm doing what I'm doing instead of just having repetitive fish catches, just me reeling in a fish all the time, which that happens too, but you know what I mean? Like we're trying to explain. So that's kind of the main two differences.
So Bass Tank in summary, a little more technical gear focused and your channel's a little more application and real world put to use type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. On the Bass Tank one, you're going to see our sales and, you know, advertisement, stuff like that. Mine's going to be more laid back off of that.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for the reminder, Blattel. Everybody that's watching, if you can, whether you're on Facebook or YouTube, you know, bump the like or the thumbs up. Helps get more people in here so more people can get in on the juice that we'll be getting into as we unfold tonight. Let's see here. Dennis, if your screen is blurry, it's probably because you're phone or your device is watching it in a lower resolution. So usually there's like a little gear if you tap on the screen and you can set your resolution to like 720, which should clear up your picture, Dennis. Let's see here. There's another one I wanted to answer. Oh, yeah, yeah. Adam points out that Randy will be the first one in line to watch the live scope video. Block it.
Oh, he's my biggest fan.
Yeah, Randy's all about taking the take. He's mastered the art of like the all consuming clickbait title. Like he's really got how to get people to react and tune in just to see what he's gonna say next, right? So
yeah.
All right. Best lake in the Tulsa area that you can talk about, John. That you're willing to talk about.
Yeah, probably Keystone. Keystone. Anybody that's not familiar with Keystone, it's not big enough. They could have tournaments, but they don't have them on there. But in the springtime, it's one of those everybody will have 20 pounds. Now it may only take 21 to 23 to win. You know, I've had a couple 23-pound sacks. Anything bigger is really, really big. But it's just Oklahoma is known for 4-pounders. You know,
right.
We have a lot of 4-pounders.
They did have a Bass Nation. Was it a regional?
Yeah, I think
or
it was
national.
Like, yeah, I think it was like the worst one in history. I think they just got the bass virus or something.
But that was a lake that was on a downswing back then. It was Tad Packies from Iowa that won it, if I remember right, on a spinnerbait. We talked about that when we had TK on a couple weeks ago. All right. This quick question. Any plans to look at another location for the bass tank?
You know, we get we probably get approached once a week about this, and the biggest deal that we have right now is maintaining our growth that we have at the moment. Maintaining our name and our brand and our reputation is extremely important, and myself, my partner, and actually everybody underneath us. You know, this isn't my first business, but this is by far my love. You know, my favorite of all the businesses that I own, operate, and manage. And I can make money doing my other businesses, but I'm not near as happy. And what I've noticed in the past, in my construction, for instance, when I was doing tile setting, I wanted to be the best tile setter that I could be. And when I became the best tile setter that I knew, I really found out that not much of the world cares or really appreciates that. And it became a little bit of a bitterness through just always trying to, you know, explain to people why, you know, why it was more expensive because I was doing it right, you know, and in the fishing world where we're at right now, we're doing the same thing. We're wanting to be the best at what we're doing and people are appreciating it. They're seeing it. I'm not having to explain it. And I love it. I love having happy customers. I love, you know, not having to chase the dollar, you know, just being at peace at what we're doing. Putting out a product there that we can stand behind, a brand that everybody else wants to get behind, and building a community, and that can, you know, long answer, but it could get ruined really quickly if we franchised out and somebody decided they were gonna, you know, break away from that. So until I can firmly find that someone's got that same bloodline, I can look in their eyes and trust them 100%. That will never, probably won't happen.
Or if you can clone yourself.
Yeah, I've actually been trying. I have a 14-year-old son. I have a 2-month-old, so we'll see.
Or if somebody on your core team decides, you know what, I don't want to be in Tulsa. I want to live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and then you can trust them to open a branch, right? So.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that I can foresee coming down the road, and I've had a lot of opportunities. I've got a couple guys that I would love to do it with, actually. It's just a matter of probably the right timing. Like I said, when we do it, I'm going to be there and make sure it's done right. And
absolutely.
And right now we don't have the bandwidth to step away from making sure what we've got now is still the best that we can be.
Yeah. It's the right way to do it. Yeah. More important to just grow steady and slow and stick to the brand than try to just blow it up and have it all implode for sure.
Yeah.
So Critical Gravy says, any new things for kayaks? Is there anything you see out there like really specific to kayaks, or do you see that it's, I mean, what I'm seeing is it's the same stuff on kayaks as it is on bass boats with slightly different mounting. I don't know. Do you see a big difference in what, as far as like.
So we've only done a few kayaks and we've got a few pro staffers that are sponsored by kayak companies. And then we've done some stuff, you know, Drew Gregory is going to be coming out with a, you know, kayak soon. And you know, Johnny Schultz had got a couple kayaks thrown his way, and we got to play with them. And what we found is every kayak's like a custom. It's like its own deal because, and so there are a lot of cool things out there with kayaks. I would say everything that big boats have, it's coming to the kayak world and already is there. But a lot of those guys are just they're kind of figuring out how to custom install that. And what I mean by that is custom install is because you could just have like one mounting bracket for every, you know, a couple kayaks, and it's not going to work the same depending on that person, the way they sit or stand, or, you know, just a bunch of different factors, how big they are, if they're small, like there's different places and locations. And because kayaks are so small, that mounting process is what's custom. Sure. So,
but as far as like, it's just, you don't see a ton of 16 inch screens on kayaks. You probably see more, you know, 8, 9s and 10s, and then you got more custom mounts. But as far as like, you're using the same transducers, it's just kind of more of a custom setup.
Everything on the deucer side is the same. Well, I'm talking more about mounting and accessories of that nature, and how the deucers are mounted as well as the head unit.
So this is a question you hear: LiveScope and Panoptics, are they the same?
LiveScope is a family in the Panoptics family. Panoptics, the PS21, 22. And there may have been one before that I'm not remember the number of 15. I can't remember the number of it. Maybe it was just 20. I can't remember. But those were 40 forward shooting sonars, and they were out 10 years ago. I mean, honestly,
when Christy won on St. Clair, right? Like a decade ago, he was actually using early Panoptics.
Yeah. And so LiveScope is a deviation of that. It's in that same. So it's actually, if you look it up in the Garmin, it'll say it's Panoptics LiveScope. Mm-hmm. So it's a part of that same family, but the original Panoptics was more like a blob technology. It looked more like a 2D return than actually a living image of or picture. So those are the main differences. I would say real quickly to explain. They didn't need a black box, and it didn't, you know, all that stuff.
Sure. Will says, "What's up?" He says, "Looks like he maybe met you at the Classic, and the A-Rig holster is awesome."
Yeah, that's cool. That's a buddy of mine's. Oh, sorry guys, it's on a motion sensor.
Over, we had to cancel it. The lights went out.
I got to get that fixed. It happens all the time. But so yeah, the A-Rig holster is a cool little deal that a buddy of mine, Joe Holmes, invented it, and he came and partnered with the Bass Tank, gave us the rights to use it and license it, and it's a little clip-on that I mean, it completely takes all the tangles away on your A-Rig. Like, you could put, I'll probably do it one day, I'll probably do a video and put like 15 to 20 A-Rigs on rods and just put it in my box and then go run across the water when it's really bad, and you'll see no tangles. Like, it doesn't come off. So if you get frustrated with how you rig or have to hook your A-rigs to your rod and then take off from spot to spot, that A-rig holster is, it's just a little cool deal, man. And that's what the Bass Tank was originally started. Before we even got into electronics, we started it, and it was just the name was, the Bass Tank is a think tank for bass fishing is all it is. We have all these little ideas that we want to bring to market, and that is way easier said than done. I promise you, you can have 1,000 good ideas, but getting it to market has been the difficult task. And that's been a challenge in business, actually.
Yeah. So even if you don't need like a full, I mean, if you go on their website, they've got a handful or several,
give me one second.
Yeah. While he's going, there's like several unique things. Like, they've got these Velcro straps instead of using cable ties and things like that for mounting and cleaning your electronics, you know, in your setup. So they've got like different straps and mounts and little accessories for setting up electronics that kind of clean things up and make things, you know, a better install.
Yeah, so this is the packaging of it. You see the camera, and there's a good picture there. You can see it now. It's on your rod, and clicks on the rod, and the baits click there. So that's it. A-Rig holster. This is one out of a package. It looks like it just clips on the rod right there, and the A-Rig hooks go in those little holes. So usually when I'm fishing with it, if I'm going to be there for a while, I pop it off my rod and put it in my pocket. It's not that heavy, but it's just, I'm kind of anal that way about stuff. So
as long as you're not throwing like a double mega with like 12 arms.
Then you need two of these and you'd have to pop two of them on. Yeah. Then it would work.
Nice.
I think we got these on sale for like $20 right now.
Nice.
So,
which, you know, right, you're not likely to have more than one or two rods that you consistently throw A-rigs on, so.
I don't know, unless you're chasing, double digits down south. I mean,
sure.
A lot of these guys were out there with, three, I might have three myself and a buddy might have three in a boat. We got a light head, medium head, and heavy head, and, three egg rigs rigged up all at once.
Yeah, well, they only allow us to use one hook in Minnesota, so.
So you got four dummies?
Yeah, or blades.
Is there a dummy rule too?
Most of our Minnesota rigs are all blades and one swim bait. I think there might be something against actual bait teasers as well, but
that's interesting.
So I guess this is a question that's on most people's minds. What's the LVS 34 is the next generation, the newest generation live scope transducer, right? It works with all the existing units. What is the big, for those that haven't dove in on, videos and seen what it's all about, what's the biggest change in the technology with the new transducer?
Well, fortunately I can speak from experience. Not a lot of people can. We had one hooked up last week. We mounted it real quick on top of the LVS 32 and ran them both side by side at the same time. Actually, one was on top of the other. We didn't have a lot of time to prep for this. So they kind of interfered with each other. So we had to end up having to run one at a time. But the main two differences are they've changed the angles in the way the faces are mounted. It looks a lot more like an active target transducer. And the attempt was to create, to eliminate the blind spots and the ghost trees and to be able to create more separation. And they've accomplished that. I mean, the LVS 34, the LiveScope Plus, it doesn't have a ghost tree. It doesn't have blind spots at all. I tried to create them. Like, you can create one if you just do some stupid stuff with it. And you can still see your lure through that, though. I actually ranged out to about 140, 150 feet. I mean, I was at like 200 feet ranged out, but at 140 feet, I could see fish. But not only could I see fish, I could actually count that there was three separate fish at 140 feet. So object separation is greater. So I didn't get to put it into every situation in the world that you could possibly put it in, but we did run it for a day, and we're going to have a video coming out probably Sunday night. I'll probably drop it. It'll be on my personal, and it's just, like the first fish catches with LiveScope Plus and talking about, what we're seeing and the difference between the two, and maybe some side-by-side comparisons will be on that video as well.
Does it do anything for cleaning up this? I mean, we'll get into maybe this, but you like to run your units hot with a lot of, and you get a lot of like fuzz and stuff in the back, but is the new transducer doing anything to like clean up the picture? Cause that's, some people don't like Garmin's more like there's a lot of information and like, active target runs a little cleaner, or at least it looks cleaner, but I don't know. Is it the same picture? Does that change anything with the new transducer?
You can, it's similar either way. I mean, it is technically cleaner, but as you said, I kick it up and run it all hot. So I make it not look clean.
Sure.
I want the information.
Cool. From the perspective of a shallow water river angler, if you had to build your tech one piece at a time, where would you start?
Shallow water river. The most important thing that I'd probably have is probably a GPS. And one that had a processor that was quick enough to catch up, so that if you're running 60 mile an hour in an area that you need to know where stumps are, good mapping. I know that's silly, but that's probably the number one thing. And then from there, probably standard 2D is probably going to be the next thing. And then depending on what kind of fish I fish for and how much, I would probably go straight to the live scope from there.
Yeah. Cool. AP Fishing says LiveScope doesn't seem to be ideal in shallow grassy lakes. How is perspective mode in those conditions?
I guess you're going to have to describe to me how grassy you're talking about, because I've caught them in a lot of grass, man. I think that it is more difficult, but you can train yourself to see fish in and around grass. Now, if we're talking about, you know, some of that northern stuff that's 12 foot thick and wavy and standing up real tall and getting around your transducer and stuff like that, then yeah, then I can understand that. Nothing's going to help you in those situations. I don't care if you're maybe 2D, maybe, like, there's nothing that's going to help. You're going to have to use it to for the edges. And so, you know, if you're on, but if it's not to the surface, then, you know, perspective or standard live scope can still, will still work. It just depends on what your goals are with your transducer, what you're trying to see. Are you trying to see the grass? Are you trying to see the clumps? Are you trying to see bait fish? Are you trying to see the edges? Are you trying to see the points? Are you trying to see the thicker walls? You know, what are you trying to see? And what are you actually targeting? Those are the questions that I have to have answered before I can answer that exactly.
Yeah, I think that was a good analysis. Adam Miller, welcome to Team Hella. Appreciate it. That's awesome. I'll give you a quick little, where is that? This little show here. All right, little new member, one of us. Welcome, appreciated. we want to celebrate the small victories, and hopefully we answer all your questions tonight, Adam. All right. Daniel says, am I correct in assuming the Echomap UHD 93SV is the 9-inch screen on Bass Tank?
Yeah, it's a 9-inch. The 9 stands for 9-inch. And I think we got those on sale for like $6.99 right now. And we got a LiveScope bundle on sale for like $19.50 with that unit with a LiveScope. All in stock, would ship out tomorrow morning.
Yeah. So if I'm correct, what I've heard is that's like the best bargain standalone unit.
No.
Right? Yeah, like it's not, that doesn't network if you have a full Garmin
setup. It does network. It has some network limitations. We could go through those, but it also comes with a GT54 transducer, which is not the high-end UHD, but that unit has the capability.
Okay.
But it does have an 800 hertz, you know, side, down, and traditional sonar. So, like, for somebody that was wanting to know, like, if that same guy was like, hey, I've got about $700 to spend, which I spent it on, I'd say buy that, because it's going to come with a, you know, that unit has mapping, GPS, 2D, side imaging, down imaging. It's like an $1,100 typical retail deal. It's a $350 transducer, and you're getting it for $700.
Nice.
Yeah. So the limitations are, it doesn't have two network ports in the back, is one of the limitations. So if you decide that you want two of those 93s, you have to get a port expander. So it may be wiser at some point for some individuals, instead of getting two 93s, to get like one 10-inch and one 9-inch, or one 12-inch and one 9-inch, because it has an extra port networking cable on the back, so you can network your units together.
I'm not sure what John Critical Gravy is at. He said something about a robot over your right shoulder on the top shelf, but I don't see a robot.
Right shelf.
I don't know.
I got a hat.
Maybe he's seen something different than I am.
Here, I'll show you guys what this is.
Maybe he's too far into the bourbon. I don't know.
This right here. This is my cage. So I've been prepping for five events that I got to fish in a row, back to back to back to back. I got to leave next week, and I won't be back for 5 weeks. At least my truck won't. And so a lot of stuff goes into my truck. A lot of stuff goes. I got custom cabinets and stuff built in the back of my truck. But this right here is everything that will be going in my boat. So that's just pack organizations, all that is.
Yeah. So you got 9. So this is like your rolling inventory cart prepping for this trip.
Oh, 100%.
Uh-huh. So this is like, you know, like you see people like picking online orders at Walmart. John's picking his own online orders for his 5 week sprint of tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah. I built all my boxes for the next 4 events.
And so where are y'all headed, and what events you got coming up?
So I've got, I'm fishing all the MPFLs this year. Those that aren't familiar with the MPFLs, I'll be fishing all those again. This year is our second year. Then I'm fishing all the opens. I got a exemption through Yamaha. Thank you, Yamaha, again. So I got into all 9 opens, and I'm going to take advantage of that and try to qualify for the elites is the goal. So we got 15 big events. The first one was already done. It was on Kissimmee. The second one is on Cherokee Lake. It's another open, a Southern Open.
Let's not gloss over your top 10 eighth place finish, which is a great start for the first open.
It is a good start. And it's actually my second top 10 in a row on the opens. I jumped in the grand one last year to just kind of put my fingers out, and I got fourth in that one. So I've got a, I wish those points rolled in this year, but obviously they don't. So yeah, we got the eighth place. We got Cherokee Lake, which is a Southern. From there, I was supposed to go to the Ray Scott Championship in Eufaula, Alabama, but I'm going to be driving my vehicle out to the St. James, which is the next event, and flying home for a week, and then I'll fly back. So St. James is a Northern. It will be the first Northern of the year, Northern Open. After, I keep on saying St. James. I don't know why I'm saying that. It's the James River in Richmond. And then from the James River, I'll be driving back to Hartwell for the second MPFL of the year. And from Hartwell, and when I'm saying drive back, I mean, like, as soon as the tournament's over, I'll be loading my vehicle and driving to start practice. I may miss a practice day or something. And then when MPFL's over, I'll drive straight down to Ross Barnett in Mississippi, fish the first Central Open of the year, which would be the fourth overall Open of the year. And I come home, and I think I have a three-week or four-week break after that. So we'll see. We'll see at that point where we're sitting in points. And
I'll say, in 5 weeks, we'll have a much better picture of how your goal for the year of making the elites is looking.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, four chances, right? You can qualify through each one of the divisions individually and then the overall points. And you can't be off to a much better start than you are by getting a top 10 in the first one. So,
yeah.
All right. So back to the technical questions. How underutilized is perspective mount, and where and when and where is the best time to use perspective in your opinion?
When you're under 7 feet deep, a lot of people say 10 foot, but to me it's 7 foot or less. When you're in flats, 7 feet or less, what I mean by flats is areas that don't have a lot of ups and downs, you know, a lot of ditches. A ditch is okay, but not a lot. Maybe you're looking for one or two stumps in a stump field. Maybe you're looking for brush piles in a flat. Maybe you're looking for grass edges. You can also utilize it a little bit like 360 in a way to find, you know, beds, you know, whether we're talking about tilapia beds or brim beds or even some bass beds. You know, those are the situations where it's going to, you know, going to pan out the best for you. Shallow water.
Cool. Yeah, he's a little bit of luck won't hurt on this this road trip. Jates, all right. At least you made it. Late than ever. We've been flirting right around 100. I think we peaked at 100. We had a few people drop off, but that's cool. I don't know. Any thoughts on Cumberland? It was a rough tournament for everybody, basically, except for Taylor.
yeah. Taylor's been blessed, man. He's been fishing awesome, and he tore us up, man. I mean, he just completely KO'd us and just kept on throwing punches. No, I mean, Cumberland was a unique deal for me. You know, my biggest deal at the moment is, you know, mental preparation, and I have no excuses. I'm not making excuses. I've got a busy schedule of events. And like right before that event, my truck broke down and I had to drive out with my wife's car, throw everything in my wife's Expedition, figure out how to get, you know, set up to haul with the boat, and then immediately drove out. And when we get to Cumberland, it's 22 degrees. And so the first day of practice, I mean, you're not doing a lot of running around in 22-degree weather. You're doing a little bit of idling. You're doing a little bit of casting. You're kind of just trying to stay warm, waiting for things to warm up. And then the second day, the wind started coming in. And Cumberland, I just never been there. It looked all the same. I didn't find much in practice. And by the end of the second day and third day, we started getting all that rain. And so there wasn't any practicing to be done on the third day. And then, you know, we have an off media day, and the lake just began to continue to rise and rise and rise. And so they canceled day one and day two. And that lake came up, I don't know, 12 to 15 feet probably. Which, you know, that part wasn't as bad. It was just the debris that it brought down. And thankfully, they figured out kind of a creative way to launch us at three different sites so we could actually get fishing in. And we still had a weather delay on day three for 10 minutes before we could take off. So,
right.
You know, it was just a unique deal to make things fair. We all fished the same. Like I ended up, my launch was at 9:10 on the third day. So, you know, it was just an odd thing. And I'm actually thankful that I caught two little bitty fish. And I didn't catch a check, but I got 44th place. And I think there was like 50 guys that blanked, 47, 40, something, a high amount. And that's no good for points for the end of the year, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it was, I don't know if you did you ever check out Taylor's footage? I mean, that was just old school, like,
yep.
Spinnerbait yep. 101, just like putting it to them. That was some good stuff.
Yep. I don't think you could just do that anywhere on the lake. I think that was a lot of a location situation as well. And that's what's difficult about Cumberland is that there's a, you know, they all look the same, but they don't all act the same. You know, all the little cuts and stuff like that.
Bass Tank has their own aftermarket harness. There's a few other companies that have aftermarket harnesses. What makes those so important, and are they needed? Are they essential? Are they just they're a luxury? Like, what's your take, and what is the advantage?
I mean, the Bass Tank was started because of this problem. I broke down at the Forest Wood Cup because the harness that was in the boat that I had at that time wasn't good enough. It wasn't ran right. It was improper installation from the manufacturer on down. The manufacturers have tried, but they still haven't got it right. They don't listen. They're trying to save pennies and pinch pennies. And so to me, they're absolutely necessary. You've got the Bass Tank power harness. It's been something that's taken because of COVID and whatever excuse we want to make. It's taken 3 years for us to get it out there to market for everybody. But it's been a part of our plan from the very beginning because of my own personal experience of breaking down. So, you know, they're not running the right gauge, and the people that are right in the right gauge, they're still not running the right wire. They're still running, through their starter, and they'll split off from there and things of that nature. It's not direct power. There's just a lot that's not right from the factory. So, listen, if you're only going to run a couple of units, you're fine. But as the technology era grows and as we pull more amperage from the front and the console, there is extreme need that you have good, clean power. And so, yeah, the Bass Tank power harness to me is a necessity.
Cool. And is there any like big advantage to the Bass Tank harness versus a Sea Clear or any of the others? Are they all pretty good, or is there like big differences?
Well, you're going to get our tech support. You're not going to get that anywhere else.
Sure.
I don't spend time looking at other people's products or anything like that, or digging into anything. So I can't really even speak to that. But you're not going to find any other company that's got the experience on the water and the tech support that we have. So, nice. And that, like I said, that's engineer owned. So my partner's an engineer. So, you know, if you order a harness from us, we got a doubles, we have singles. Ours come, with the breakers that you need already. What I mean by double or single, let's say that you're a Humminbird guy, but you want a live scoop and you want to just run that directly to the front. So all you need is a single harness. You don't need a double. Me personally, I'd go ahead and run a double and have power both places, but you know, we have that option available for individuals.
When would you need a double versus a single, or when would it require it?
Yeah, you definitely need a double if you want to run units at your console and at the bow. So okay. You need a double, you know, double harness, two different locations. The single harness is just a one shot. So, you know, for those guys that, let's say you're a Lowrance guy and you already got all your units, and then you're like, but I want to put a Mega 360 in. So, you know, you just need a single to run that up to the front to run off that Mega 360 off of. So.
But the double, you can actually split off at the console, and then the rest of it
correct.
Goes to, all right, cool.
Correct. Well, run, yeah. One runs to the console and the double, the other, the second line runs to the front. Yeah.
So speaking of power, there was a question here. Do you run lithiums for your everything, or just like some people don't run lithiums for their starting, or like, how do you, what is your setup for batteries?
So I run an express boat. I don't have a lot of room in the back. And for the last 3 years, I've ran all lithium. I run 212s in parallel. For my starter and for all my units. And then I run 236 volts, for my trolling motor. And it's unnecessary to have that much storage, but I have one battery to back up the other if something happens while I'm on the tour and going around. I can run three to five days without ever charging. And I have a, and I run on PowerPole charge as well.
Right.
Now, with that being said, you got to be careful by just saying, speaking out and saying, yes, I run lithium starter battery, because there's older motors and stuff that it can cause issues with. So, you know, you really need to take a look at your manufacturer before you just decide to do that, because, you know, the safest we're bet is just to do an AGM.
Yeah. Any reservations about some of the cheaper lithiums, or have you heard?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
What's the risk that you've seen with that?
Well, it's all in the computer, and they spend a lot less money on the computer. So the brains of the battery, and if the brains aren't right, it can actually spit out too much power or not enough at different times. But too much is even worse. It can cause problems, especially if it kicks back to the motor, and then you could your motor will die. At best, your motor will just die and cut off when you're going 60, 70 miles an hour. You know, at best, it could actually end up shorting things out and really causing a lot of problems.
So it's probably even a bigger risk with your starting and your electronics. If you were going to maybe skimp on maybe your trolling motor batteries, but then if they go bad, then you're out without a trolling motor, right? But
when you asked me about the basic power harness being a necessity, this is where it's like, absolutely, because the breaker systems that we have in the power harness, if like you have a voltage spike of some kinds and it's shooting to your units, that the breaker is going to pick that up and they're going to flip, and it's not going to get to the unit. So it protects that from that surge.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's one, but as far as why performance of lithiums, I've been flawless for 3 years. Like I love my lithiums. I love how light they are. I love the room that it creates in the back of the boat. I love how simple things are. I personally wouldn't have it any other way.
Everest says he just he ordered a Garmin Force and got the product quick, 5 stars.
The Garmin Force and the Ghost, if you're a Lowrance guy, what's amazing about those two is the power usage on those things is so much lower, the pull. Like we've had customers that have had, you know, other trolling motors, I'll just put it that way, that, you know, they're burning their batteries up in 8 hours, 10, you know, before the day's over, and they switch over to a Force or to a Ghost. The last guy happened to be a Force, and, you know, he could run it. He can't run his batteries out. It's because those new trolling motors are so much more efficient. So
that's just the brushless technology?
The brushless technology. You know, it's not the heat. It's not pulling on it. It's the brushless technology that helps.
So do you guys train pros? Do you get people that come in and want training on the water? Is that stuff you do, or is that not something you guys do? Or
yeah, it's absolutely stuff I do. I've spent a lot of time with a lot of pros. It's funny because some are proud about it, you know, like in a good way. They're calling brag and it makes you feel good. And others, they're like, oh, I'm doing this thing, and they don't want to tell people. I don't know. It's a pride thing, I guess. They don't want to tell that they're, but you know, it's fun. It's a cool opportunity for us to work with guys. That's how I got into the crappie tournament world, was actually training guides and professional crappie guys how to use the live scope. And then we were so good at it that we just decided to stay with it and go on the tour, on the crappie tour for a while, for a couple of years, and, you know, create relationships and make sales with the live scope in the crappie world. So, but yeah, no, we do on the water training. I just did a 2-day deal this last weekend with an individual. So you just have to message me privately and go from there.
Cool. You see some head to head videos, people looking at like Garmin versus Active Harvick versus Mega Live. I mean, how far do you think the spectrum is? Is it the hardware? Is it the software? Is there a big difference? What do you think? What's your opinion?
And John's
not sponsored by Garmin, so.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not sponsored by Garmin. I promote and sell Garmin like crazy, but we sell Lowrance and Humminbird as well. Let me answer that. Let me just be direct. Probably only one of those videos of the head-to-head do I actually trust. I know the people that are behind those other videos. I know how, if you wanted me to make one look good and one look bad, I could do that right now. And if someone slid me money in my pocket, I might do that. You know what I mean? Like, so that's what's going on in a lot of those videos, is those guys, even though they say they're not sponsored, there's big name pros that say they're not sponsored by certain places, 100% are sponsored by these other guys. And so they're actually paid to not say that they're not sponsored. So it's, you know, it's, I don't like that. That's frustrating to me. I don't like the not truths about stuff. I will say right now, MegaLive is nowhere near Active Target or LiveScope. Nowhere near. Hummingbird's having a lot of failures. They're having a lot of problems. It's very difficult. When I say 9 out of 10 customers have problems, I'm not mistaken. It's like 99 out of 100 people are having problems with their Hummingbirds right now. So we do want to support
MegaLive, or in general.
In general, everything. Okay. And it makes it very hard for us to want to, you know, promote MegaLive in any way because of the customer support that causes on the back end for us when their Helix goes down or their Solux goes down or it comes in and they won't read the MegaLive and won't have. So it doesn't matter what the technology is. If they can't get their customer service together and their products better, it's just not worth promoting. So that's just straight up where I'm at on that right now. If somebody else wants to, you know, prove me wrong, then please prove me wrong. But I mean, I'm dealing with it every day. We deal with the phone calls we see. It's just so the MegaLive is not where now. The reason that a lot of these top end pros are able to use MegaLive to catch fish better than anybody else is because they're top end pros, man. Like, you give them this little bit of information and they can run, you know. So it's still really good. You know, if you were to take Active Target away, you take LiveScope away out of the picture, it's still really cool and good technology. It's just when you want to, when you want me to say, hey, John, what's side by side, what's better than the other? You're going to be able to catch a lot of fish on Active Target. It's extremely good. It's got a 18 degree cone instead of 20. Now what that does for you is it allows you to be more accurate, but then you also see less. The processor in Active Target, intentionally from the engineers, we've had a lot of conversations with them. They've catered to the fact that they feel like the consumer wants a clearer image on the screen. So their processor filters out that information to make that screen clearer. A lot of people think that's good. You can still see fish, but I think that at certain distances, it harms my ability to be able to identify the size of fish, maybe even the species of fish. So on a day when they're really active, you're not going to tell the difference. You're going to be able to catch, but on the days when they're inactive and you got to really tell the head between the tail and you're trying to pick out whether that fish is a 2-pounder or a 5-pounder. So it makes it more difficult. It doesn't make it impossible. It just makes it more difficult. So those are some of the main differences. So on the Garmin side of things, you're going to have a lot more settings where you can really run the unit hot, see a lot of the grain, see a lot of the details, see a lot more of the line, the fuzz on the line, the eyes on the fish, and things like that of that nature. So that's, you know, that's where I tend to lean. With all that being said, if you're a Lowrance guy and you love your Lowrance and you got $1,500, there's no reason to not go out and buy an Active Target and put it on there and run it on your HDS Lives or your Carbons or whatever you have that's compatible with it, because that technology right there is going to be, and if you learn how to use it, will be your biggest, you know, your biggest strength. I actually went out with the Lowrance guys. It's out there somewhere floating around, that video. I caught a 9¾-pounder with the Lowrance guys in the Lowrance boat with Active Target. It was pretty neat. You know, we were out there testing it and early on, and it's been a couple years ago. So,
yeah, I mean, one of the few advantages from my understanding from the Live is it doesn't require an external box, but I feel like that's also part of its limitation, right? It doesn't have power and the hardware to, cause you're trying to run everything off the unit. Right. So I think that might be some of its limitations at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there's anything they're going to be able to do through software updates to really improve it without just coming out with the next generation?
No, I don't think so. I think you're going to have software updates, but at some point the next generation is going to come out and then they're going to focus on the next generation software updates. They're not going to keep on going retroactive and working on old, you know, old products. So,
yeah.
You know, which is the number one, when people ask about getting the LiveScope Plus versus the old Deucer, that's kind of the way I feel about that too. Like when LiveScope Plus comes out, Garmin engineers are going to work on LiveScope Plus their updates. And at some point, those older units, like the 7612s for Garmin, there's no more updates for those. You know, they went to the 8600. The same thing's going to happen with the LiveScope, the LVS32. Those new updates are going to be geared towards that LiveScope Plus.
Yeah. So, I mean, that guy's the one thing, like, if you have a Hummingbird unit and you just, I mean, because I think you can actually hook up, what, 360 and Mega Live for the same unit because they use different ports. So, I mean, like, right. If you're really looking for, like, entry level, you already have, I mean, it's an option, but it's, you know, that's probably some of the advantages. But I think it's probably going to be, right, it's going to go the way of the, what was it called, the Lowrance Spotlight, right, which was kind of the
LiveSight.
Yeah, that first attempt was pretty forgettable as well for Lowrance. They kind of swept that under the rug. And
yeah, it was more of old Panoptix technology is what that was. Yeah, that's what it was comparable to.
Right.
Yeah.
So one take I have, right, and I actually haven't used front facing, and I'm setting my next boat up to get ready for it. I will get it. From my perspective, it front facing live sonar, there's really not much advantage to have it integrated into your system that I can tell. Like, having a standalone unit is really not much of a downside. Or do you think there's a reason to have it really integrated into the rest of your electronics?
Well, it depends on what you want to do with it. There are reasons. You know, if you have it hooked into, you know, an 8600 series on Garmin, then you can run it into your Active Captain. You can, you know, screen record.
Yep.
So there's the other reason is, like, when I'm training people, I can, you know, you can't do this on EcoMap. So we're talking about the 8600 series or the GPS map series of any kind. You know, I can sit back at the console instead of standing over somebody and breathing over them. I can play the LiveScope right there. And I can, you know, mirror what's going on, and I can coach them through, you know, what's going on there, or vice versa, if they want to sit back in the console, or if we're wanting to film and stuff like that. So,
or if you're guiding, right? Like, that's like, if you're a guide, there could be some big advantages for that. For sure.
I do that for my co-anglers a lot of times, like, because I know, like, if they're not aware of who I am or what we're about to do, if I am live scoping, you know, they ask a lot of times, they're like, what are we going to do tomorrow? I'm like, we're going to go out in the middle of the lake and spin circles. And that's sometimes how it feels. And so I know that that is a horrible experience as a co-angler. So I try to at least give them some kind of, hey, this is at least going to be a cool learning experience. You can actually see what I'm seeing. And that way it doesn't look like I'm a crazy guy out there chasing hopes and dreams, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But as far as, like, I guess my take was, like, when you're standing at the bow, right, and you're fishing, and, like, if you already have, let's say you're a Hummingbird person and you've got your 360 and you got your setup, there's not really much advantage to integrating a Mega Live versus adding a Garmin or adding an active target. You know what I mean? Like, the functionality of that unit, you know, like the waypoint sharing and that kind of stuff, there's not a lot of advantage. Like, I don't think. I mean, like, I guess what I'm saying is, I'd rather have the best live front facing technology available to me than worry about whether it integrates into the rest of my system. Is that a fair?
Yeah. Yeah. If you've got the money and space and time, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we're getting really expensive. So, like, there's a situation, right, like, you got a Hummingbird and it's in the newest generation. You can run a live and that's the money you've got, then it makes sense to put that thing on. And if it's put it on now or wait for 3 years, it's put it on now. You know, sure, that's the answer. Yeah. Like I said, the technology is still great and it's still good. And it's an awesome tool. You're going to catch fish with it. You know, we're just talking about the side-by-side comparisons.
Sure. Is there any talk about Garmin or anybody else trying to, I mean, I know Lowrance has this 360 thing, which seems like not very functional because it, like, takes over your trolling motor and spins your head around, from what I understand. And, like, seems kind of impractical for a lot of situations, but are the other, do you think Garmin and LiveScope are really going after that 360, or do you think that's kind of niche and they're just going to focus on improving the LiveScope, or what do you think the future looks like?
I don't have the crystal ball to tell you on that stuff. I think that they'll give you hints. Like, they all have their personalities. Hummingbird, Lowrance, and Garmin have their personalities in the way they like to leak information or not leak information. Garmin is extremely tight-lipped beyond anybody else. Like, they just drop it immediately.
Goes back to their aerospace history, right? They keep everything.
Yeah. Yes, they do. Like, extremely. But I think that it shows that Lawrence is, you know, working on. I mean, the only reason why it can't do the same thing the Hummingbird does is because the Hummingbird's, you know, it's on its own pole, right? Yeah. So, like, there's probably they figured out how to use their transducer to create that. Now it's on the trolling motor. So as soon as it gets off the trolling motor and they get around whatever patents or whatever they have to with Hummingbird, they've got the 360 technology. You can see it. It's right there.
They've got the software ready for when it's the hardware there. Can be.
Yep. So I don't know why, like I said, other than if it was a patent thing, that they don't have a 360 coming out. I don't know. Maybe by ICAST. I don't know when. But I would see that was something that they potentially would do if I was in their shoes, you know.
Nick said he was at some kind of Garmin training and they swore they're not looking at 360.
Yeah.
All right. can you touch on 0-degree mounts? Can it work when mounted to the trolling motor shaft? Is there a benefit?
No. Only time you'd want to do a 0-degree mount and you wouldn't even do it is if you were going to mount it to the head, actually on the side of the motor. If you put a 0-degree mount on the shaft, you're going to hit the head of the trolling motor. You're going to have a big black spot. So the 8-degree kickout is designed intentionally to look to the side and over your trolling motor. So you wouldn't want that. The only reason that you'd want a 0-degree mount is if you're going to put it on a pole and you want to look directly below that pole, like ice fishermen, for example. No. If you do have it on a boat and you want to look directly down, then a 0-degree mount works. But the 8-degree kickout is just something that over time you just get used to. I'm so accustomed to it now, I don't know what it'd be like to not use it. But let's say like you were up north and you were going to drop right below the trolling motor. You can mount the live scope to the head of your trolling motor, not to the shaft. And you can actually slide that ring around in a way that you'll get directly below, and that will actually be similar to the 0-degree mount.
I can't imagine the grass catching on that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Are there any good resources for kayak setups that Will could check out?
I can't really speak honestly. It's the kayak world is something that I want to do a lot better and get involved in more. But I'm not up to par on that like I should be.
Will the LVS 12 be much of a disappointment from the LVS 32?
Yeah, it would be. But the thing about the 12 is that you don't need the black box of the 12, okay? But the 12 is just what it says. The LVS 1.2 versus the 3.2. It's one ray versus three rays.
Okay.
So you're only going to see, 60 degrees, maybe even less than that, versus the 145 or whatever that you're seeing with the regular live scope. So if you're shooting forward constantly, or you can twist, you know, you can twitch it, you know, it's only going to show like this much of the path. So. But, you know, for $500, you can do some things if that's what that's in your budget. But if you can spend the extra money, you're going to really want the LVS 32.
All right. Brent, River Rat, Wabasha checking in with some technology. When talking resolutions, it's confusing. Some are better in Simaging, but not in live scope. If you're using it for live scope only, can you explain the differences in resolution and what it does for you?
Nothing at this point in time, man. They're all too good. Like that's a talking point that it's mute as far as I'm concerned. There is no difference. The biggest difference that you're going to see when we're talking about Garmin, in anything, anybody in the family of three that can run their forward shooting sonar has enough resolution to do everything that you need to do. Any more resolution, it doesn't really benefit you at all. What does benefit you is the processors. So if you're wanting to see more detail and you want a quicker return, less delay, go with the units with the greater processors. Like, for example, I run an 8600 series in Garmin, which is the highest, you know, of their units. However, they've got a unique thing going in the EcoMaps family and the Ultras, the UHDs, whether it's the 106s or 126s, where their screen actually has a brighter light behind the unit itself. So for those individuals that call and they're like older, and we ask them, you know, if they can't see as well, the resolution is not as important. What is important is that brighter screen so they actually see the object that they're looking at. So it's kind of weird. Like one is pro on one side and one is pro on the other. And it kind of depends on who you are as an individual and what you're using it for. So I know that's not the popular answer. I know that. That's why I get off the forums and I'm not on there anymore, because I take this technology and I catch fish with it. And, you know, when people talk about it, rather, we just go out and put our money on the line and show everybody that we know how to do it. So this is real world information. Like, you put them head to head next to each other, you're not going to find resolution that's going to just blow the socks off it. It's the processor that actually does it.
Cool. Good to know. All right. Money Bass with the $5 super chat. Thank you. I don't know. We kind of just touched on this. I guess we can come back specifically to his question. It sounds like there's a new Mega Live update coming out. I don't know. Is he saying it's improved, or is he asking if it has improved tracking and distance with the update? I'm not sure. Have you heard anything on the new updates? Have they improved? Is it incrementally getting better? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I guess, have you used Mega Live? Have you actually been out on the water with it? Or?
When Mega Live first came out, very first came out, before anybody actually had it, we actually went out and shot all three of them next to each other and compared the units to each other. Now, as far as keeping up with the last update, no, I haven't kept up with the last update. Yeah. So I couldn't speak to that.
All right. Adam asked a question about getting interference from an old Tour trolling motor. And I guess, without getting into specifics,
it's a motor guide. You got to get, like, I mean, that's a motor guide problem. If it's not ground right, it's electrical in the head.
Okay, so there is some truth that, like, old trolling motors do create issues. And that was my question, is like, do we boil it down as like, can it just be the trolling motor, or could it be the setup? But it could be just the trolling motor, even if everything else was correct, the trolling motor could be causing you issues.
Yeah, especially on the old motor guides.
Okay.
Especially. Cool. Yeah. It's a very common problem. As soon as we hear it, we already know it's a motor guide, especially an older Tour.
And is that like a lost cause, or like
a little bit? You can work with grounding the head out a little bit, but I mean, for the most part, it's time. Like, that technology, it wasn't designed to work with all this stuff too. You know what I mean? Like, so now when they create motors, they got to think about how is it going to interfere with electronics. Back then they didn't, you know, at all.
So might be time to take the leap, get a newer trolling motor. And comes with many other benefits as well. The new trolling motors are really nice. So,
right. Like I said, you can work with ground in the head, and there's some stuff that there you can work with. But I think by the time you play with all that, you're going to find out that it'd be better if you just kind of upgraded.
Yeah. So this is an interesting question. I mean, I guess technically Mega Live, right, already does it without the box. And then the LV12 doesn't have doesn't need a box.
Correct.
My take is that the box is kind of essential to get performance. Do you think there will be a stage where the units are powerful enough that we don't need the box? Or,
yeah, probably. I mean, it just is everything. As technology gets more advanced, they get smaller, right? And it gets more power. And, you know, look at our phones now, what all they can do. So, I mean, but I don't know how far away we are from that. But the black box it's the power source for those transducers.
And I guess it's kind of a little bit, right? Because, like, if we put that power into the box or into the head units, right, that's going to make the head units more expensive, right?
So yeah,
it's true. There is some flexibility to the boxes if, right, like, you can upgrade from a 10 to a 12-inch or whatever, or, like, to the new generation. And so it kind of almost somewhat keeps the cost down by making it a little more piecemeal, I think, to some degree.
Right.
Like, if we tie everything into the head and something goes wrong with the head, right, then – whereas now,
well, you got those things, those boxes get hot too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so there's, and that would be in the back of the unit as well, running hot all the time. And so there's just a lot, like I said, I think technology, that's going to be the advancement of technology. We'll see that. I don't know if it'll be in the 3-year period or so. That's my prediction. It's going to take 3 years to get to that point, but maybe it takes a little bit longer. I don't know.
Yeah. And so, I mean, think about it, right? Like, you have one box that can run multiple units, right?
Right.
So if you're going to put that technology, or maybe you just get one super unit, right? That's the smart unit, right? And then your other units are kind of your control head only type units. So maybe that's the way you do it. I don't know. It's 93SV or 1022. What are the advantages of the 1022 over the 93SV bundles?
The UHD, make sure we're talking about the UHD 93. That's important that they're out now. The advantage to the UHD 93 right now is it comes with a GT54 transducer. So that unit does GPS mapping. It's got mapping included, and it does side, down, and traditional sonar. The 1022, because on that right there, it shows just 1022, not XSV, is going to be a $1,300 unit that only will be a display unit. It's only going to run LiveScope. Now, you can get a chip, a mapping card, for, you know, $199 and put it in there, and it's going to run all the mapping that you need as well. But that's what that unit's going to be. It's just, it's only a LiveScope only. So the advantage to the 1022, or the next step up, which is the 1222, which is a 12-inch screen, is that you got a bigger screen. It's an independent unit. Some guys like the knobs. So the 93 is like part touchscreen, part, you know, buttons, but mostly, you know, touchscreen. And the 1022, it's a knob unit, so it's not touchscreen at all. It's ran off knobs.
Cool. Yeah.
So the thing that we always say is the bigger is better. Like, buy the biggest screen that you can afford.
What if you're only like, what if you're like the size of a jockey and you're only like this far off? Yeah. A 10-inch screen looks as good as a 12-inch screen if you're 6'3", right?
Yeah, probably.
You wouldn't know.
I still think that you would buy the biggest screen you can afford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what this means. Should you cut down the factory power cable if you don't need the length?
No.
All right. Quick answer. Have we heard anything about brushless motors from Makota? I've heard rumblings, but the fact that they can barely get Ultraxes out the door at the pace they need them, I don't know how quick they're going to be to get their other technology out.
Yeah. And I don't know if Power Poles is brushless or not. I'm going to assume it is. You know, it's the same thing, waiting for parts and pieces on it.
I feel like
before it's launched.
I feel like that's a fable at this point. I've heard we've had rumors for Power Pole trolling motor for 4 years now.
Yeah, I think COVID got in the way of that thing big time.
What have you noticed with Bass and LiveScope in relation to the bottom and their aggressiveness?
Okay, say that again. What have I noticed about Bass and LiveScope
in relation to the bottom and their aggressiveness? I'm not sure what that means.
Okay, so I'm going to answer it the way I'm interpreting it and let this ride out. But what I've noticed that at certain times of the year, fish that are aggressive decide to feed suspended, i.e. in the wintertime. Most of the aggressive fish on lakes that there's bait, like shad for bait, will suspend when they want to get aggressive. And they'll get away from cover a lot more when they want to get aggressive. And in the summertime, that reverts. When they get aggressive, they'll actually get down onto the bottom and feed a lot more in groups. And whether that's current oriented or not, they seem to get a lot tighter to the bottom. So, for example, in the wintertime, if I was to scope through an area and I'd see some fishes suspended, those fish may be that those were going to be the ones that I'm going to target. The ones that are tighter to cover, I'm on a cast at, because I can catch fish whether they're aggressive or not. But the ones that are ready to feed usually are going to be off cover. In reverse, in the summertime, if you're graphing, whether it's 2D side imaging or live scope, and you go over a school and they're separated by a good amount of span, individuals, blah, 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 and they're kind of suspended, those are the inaggressive fish, the non-aggressive. The aggressive ones are when they're tight, pulled together, horizontal, like knuckles dotted up right in a row, maybe a couple on top of each other, but for the most part tied to the bottom. So that's more of a summertime clue that those fish are going to be feeding.
Cool. Hopefully that is what you were looking for. I guess Money Bass says he did the update and he's seen some improvements. He was just checking to see what, so I guess he doesn't have any firsthand experience, but good to see that he's seeing some experience and there's some hope and some improvements. Speaking of updates, Botel says Garmin update or no update. I believe you're kind of like always update all the time. Or is that
I am, but there's been about three times in the last 5 years, 4 years that we've said not to, and this is one of those times.
Okay.
The last update is causing some units to have some issues and things like that. I don't know if it's some kinks that they were trying to work out for the new Deucer to come out, but we're anticipating another update anytime. So keep your eyes and ears open for the next update. But just because it says update, you guys got to look and read into it, because it could be an update. It could be all about mapping, or it doesn't mean it's all for the live scope. So, like, really pay attention. If there's been some corrections in the live scope, then that would be the time to probably update. Where we're actually, we sell update cards and stuff too, and we're telling people just kind of wait until the next update.
Do you have like a Bass Tank Twitter where it's like update, no update?
Like... Yeah, it doesn't happen very often, but this is, and I always do the update, even if I've got a tournament coming up, because I want to know how it's responding, so I know how to, the feedback I can give to the guys that are dealing with the customers, you know. So,
I think we talked about this earlier. You run lithium for your cranking batteries, everything. Is from your, other than weight, for your starting battery and electronics, do you see a big advantage for lithium? Or,
well, yeah, the reserve capacity is huge. You know, it's got way more reserve capacity to it. It's got more power to it. They're smarter, which means they can be more efficient. It's just, like I said, I can go 3 days without charging my batteries. I run Pro Guides, and I mean, literally, when I was at the Open, I didn't charge at all during practice. And so it's just a huge advantage to not have to stress out or worry. And for example, I don't know how many times you guys have been in a situation where you plugged in your batteries at night and you come back out of the motel and a breaker got popped or something, or someone pulled your cord and you didn't have juice the next day. I mean, that used to be a thing all the time. I don't even worry about it now. So that peace of mind means a lot to me. It means everything.
Nice.
So, not to mention the 10-year warranty behind lithium batteries, or 8-year warranty.
Do you guys carry the Express batteries at the Bass Tank? Or sorry, not the Express, the X2?
We got Pro Guide, Lithium Pro are the two, okay, are our right. two main batteries that we that we yeah. sell.
It's the Express, the best boat on the market.
Is the Express the best boat or aluminum boat
on the market?
I mean, I call my Express my sports car. Like, I love that Express because I can go out and fish offshore, do all my Hummingbird or all my live scoping, all my offshore stuff that I want. And then in a split second, I can be in 1 foot of water in the back of a creek. And that part right there is what's fun to me, is I love getting shallow. I love throwing a frog. I love getting into spots that no one else can get into. And you just cannot do that with any other tool. So that's where its strength is. Being able to go back and forth quickly. You know, when my fiberglass boat back in the day, if I wanted to get out of a creek, you know, I might have had to idle for 30 minutes. Now I'm on pad and I'm running out or in, and, you know, saving a lot of time, being very efficient.
It's cool. Yeah.
And you know, when you got there,
we've all learned this new, like, most of you have met John Sukup in the last 5 years, who's this like front facing wizard electronics guy. When we met, his depth finder was a flipping stick. So his roots are in the back of the creeks. Spinner baiting, buzz baiting, like that's where you learn to bass fish. I mean, that's where you grew up, right?
Yeah, we didn't even have a boat growing up. You know, it was belly boating, mini boats, you know, back to the creeks in the spring. That was the deal. So, like, you know, for years, I just lived with a frog on my, you know, a frog on my rod, and I didn't have money to be changing line all the time. So it was all braid, and it was 6 inches of water. Yeah.
So. Don't think that, you know, you see some of these pros, they say, like, oh, that guys wouldn't catch him if they didn't have live scope and all this. And John made it to his first national championship or two, and he didn't rely on a lot of electronics back then. So he can catch him both ways when he needs to. Yeah. Carolina Rig is also an effective sonar depth finding tour on a budget.
Yeah, right? Like, that's 100%. That used to be the deal. Yeah, for sure.
Any general advice on how high off the head?
7.5 inches.
That's very specific.
Yeah, that's the recommended height. You can get away with a few inches shorter, a couple inches shorter, like in certain situations where guys are running a 360 and a live scope at the same time and they're trying to work around each other. We've had to split that hair, but you may end up getting a little bit of a dark spot, a blind spot, because it hits the head of that trolling motor. But yeah, 7.5 inches.
So 7.5 is optimal. If you have to go one way, is it up or down is better?
Up would be better. Down is worse. I mean, the closer you get to the head of that trolling motor, you know, that ray is going to clip that trolling motor head and cause a little bit of a dark spot. You're not going to understand why you're not seeing things. A blind spot.
So higher is better, like if you have to go.
Yeah.
Which is also good. Yeah. When you live in Minnesota and there's grass, higher is better.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't get too high where it comes out of the water every time you get a wave.
No, for sure. I learned the hard way on my last trip down to the Ouachita River when I was back in Boggy for about 30 minutes before I snapped the head off my 360. So that was a $400 mistake.
Yeah. Plus trying to find it.
They said they can turn it around in like 5 days, but we'll see. All right, what else here? We're catching up on questions. Noise reduction, contrast, stable view, yes or no? Is there anything else to adjust?
You know, listen, I'm going to go into my appearances. I might change my appearances. My noise rejection is going to be on high. My TVG is going to be off. My ghost reject may be off or low. Like I said, I adjust my color gain. A lot of times I kick it up. And then I'll go to my game from there. Those are more Lowrance settings that we're talking about there. So, you know, for me, I don't mess with any of the stable stuff. I don't mess with changing any of the degree of the angle or any of that stuff. If it's running the way it should be, you shouldn't have to do any of that. So I'm mainly going to turn my noise eject up a touch. And I will run my units hotter than a lot of people. It does look fuzzier. And, you know, if you were to screen record what my screen looks like, once you get the recording, the video, it looks a lot cleaner. And so don't fall into that trap of seeing videos of people's screens and be like, I want my screen's not that clean. Well, theirs isn't really that clean either. It's once you put a camera on top of it, it actually filters some of that out. So, and the reason why I want mine hot is, I mean, I want to know every detail of what that fish is doing. I want to know what my lure is doing. I want to know all that stuff. And I took a guy out this weekend and I did some live scope training with him, and I could tell in the first 30 minutes, the fish weren't going to be active. They were very not active. So at one point I had to tell him, I said, hey man, we're not fishing for feeding fish. These fish aren't going to want to feed at all. We're going to have to make them want to bite. And so when you get fish that are that inactive, you have to be able to see every detail, because you can't approach from their belly. You can't approach from their tail. There's different ways that you approach an inactive fish, and he's in prey mode, not predator mode. And he's going to act like a prey that's being attacked. He's not going to like that. And so, that's why all these details are so important to me.
Sure. And so, I mean, like how much, I guess just like if you had to generally bucket, like how much is live front-facing sonar to you about seeing the fish and catching the fish you're seeing versus just the overall feedback of the ecosystem and just how are they responding to my lure? Where are they sitting in the, like, how are they react? It's like, what, if you had to gauge it, like how much is actually like seeing the fish, catching the fish versus just the overall feedback to make decisions?
Yeah. And in practice, it's the environment. It depends on how I've got them tuned in and how they're acting. When they're acting right, it's 100% seeing them. Sure. But it's always, always, always the environment. Always the environment. Even when I'm up shallow, people say you don't use it in 2 foot of water. They don't use it. I do use it up shallow. I can see things. And then, like I said, I pick up environmental cues all the time, whether it's bait or just the way the fish is reacting or, you know, several different things. The other thing that you do, the second factor that's really big is just, you know, boat positioning, you know. Identifying that there's a piece of cover there, there's a drop off here, there's a stump off this drop off, you know, holding your boat in the right position, distance off is extremely important. So, you know, where we used to have 15 different waypoints on a point, we don't have to have that anymore. We can have one, and then we can use live scope to kind of scan around and keep us in position.
Sure. Yeah. Tim, absolutely. I mean, there's been so much good stuff tonight. So, if you haven't been taking notes, I think this is going to be a great one to either re-listen on the podcast or go back and watch the replay on Facebook or YouTube, because I think it'll be definitely worth it if you came in later just to take it all back in a second time. So what are your opinion on the new Garmin color limit setting?
Like I said, the new update, I don't use it. So
you think it's like irrelevant, or you just haven't tapped
in? Yeah. No, I think it's irrelevant. I think that it was something that consumers wanted the screen to look clearer, like active target. Okay. And so that's something that they listened to the consumers and created. So if you want your screen to look like a Mega Live, you can take that comfort limit and you can slide it all the way up, and it's going to look a lot like a Mega Live or like an active target. It's going to go through the phases. It's going to start filtering out a whole lot of information. But I think that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's too much information filtered out.
Cool.
So I don't, you know, I don't use it. If
not
I ran
that you
into
know
a
what
weird
you're talking about LiveScope, but that's just your opinion.
Right. Now, will it play more into the new Deucer and stuff down the road in the future? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, the things that I don't know that the engineers are setting it up or teeing it up for. Right. So this is, you know, as of today and as of
today, this slice in time.
Yeah.
With the technology and, you know, maybe not, but
yeah, with the updates where we're at right now.
Yeah. Fair. Are you seeing much in saltwater? Are they live scoping in the red?
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that there's going to be some stuff in that realm of the world that's probably being focused on a lot more right now than in our world, honestly.
Like development wise, like they're developing
things. Right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, we did, 3 years ago, we put a Deucer, and I forgot the number on it, on the back of it's a Panoptics Deucer. It goes on the back of a Striper boat, but it shows live footage of the boat and then everything around it, like everything going on at once. And I forgot what the name of that Deucer is, but it's an awesome Deucer. So it's in the Panoptics series too.
Pro guides, that's a battery, right? So I think you said you ran two 36s.
Yeah.
Like you have a redundant backup 36 for your trolling motor, and then you've got two, right.
Two 12
volt. What were those, like 110 amp or 120 amps on your something like that?
The amp hours. I think mine are 100. Maybe they are 110s. I don't have that memorized, honestly, at the moment.
For your starting and your,
they're run parallel. Yeah, they run.
You went parallel. In more detail if you want to rewind back, but that's the cliff.
Yeah, they're parallel. Just
yeah,
to make
sorry,
sure that there's
parallel.
Cliff. That's yeah,
yep, sorry.
Yeah.
Is there a popular bundle and screen size you see kayak guys going with?
Yeah, a lot of kayak guys are jumping all over that 9-inch one that we have right now. The 7-inch one's the most popular, and the thing is a lot of them. Just like all of us have found out that the bigger screen, because the platforms are getting better, so they're able to stand up more than just sit down, and so that bigger screen helps them out. So where 9-inch felt big at first, now it's not as big, you know, when they're standing and looking at LiveScope. It may have been big for 2D or, you know, or so yeah, that 9-inch unit is the one. The 93.
That's a fair question from Jared. What do you think is a better buy? If you can only have one, getting the lithiums or getting the charge system, the Parpal charge system. I think I would kind of lean like Parpal charge. Like I think you could, if you have good AGMs and you've got a system maintain them, I think it's gonna be very, you know, bang for your buck. I think you're probably gonna get more value out of a Parpal charge and good AGMs. But
yeah, I'd have to qualify that with more questions. Like, are you a sight fisherman? Do you burn your batteries out on your trolling motor? You know, if that's your gig, then that powerful charge is not going to help out.
Yeah. If you spend 9 out of your 10 hours on the trolling motor, then you're not going to get, yeah. You don't ever fire up the main motor to get the top off. That's a good point.
Right. So then you'd want to go lithium for your trolling. Yeah. But if you idle the bunch and graph, then yeah, probably the power pole charge, if you can find one in stock, that's the next difficult thing. Is a lot of these things are hard to find right now. So,
and there is some other, like Minn Kota has some DC chargers. There's some other, I mean, their power pole is probably the Cadillac system, but there are some other DC onboard chargers that will charge your trolling motor batteries off the main motor that do serve a purpose. So that is also an option if you can't find a power pole or you don't have the money for that. I ran a 24 volt DC in my Basscat forever to top off my Chilmar batteries, and they actually worked great for that. So it's an option. So let's flip it back. Like, let's talk. What's your favorite frog? It's spinnerbait. Like, what's your, when you just, when you go out, I think you said like sometimes.
Yeah,
you go out,
I throw a, you know, a black,
go old school.
A black junior size frog.
Spro Junior, or
yeah, I mean any junior size, the okay. smaller size, and just straight black. That's it. I don't throw. That's my go-to. If you had one frog, matter of fact, for years that's all I had in my boat was that little frog.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you a jackhammer guy, or what's your favorite bladed jig?
In Oklahoma, man, we just flip it up against the rock. So I'm just like a $5 chatterbait, you know, like the cheapest we can go. Like, I mean, I do have some chatterbaits. You know, I've been playing with the Melee a little bit. I haven't learned exactly when I like one over the other, to be honest with you. It seems like the jackhammer performs well when fish are feeding more off of sight than off of feel. But I'm not quite sure exactly on that.
Nice.
Yeah. White chatterbait, white trailer. Like, you can give me a black frog, a white chatterbait, and a white trailer, and I could probably fish you around.
Nice. Yeah. Cool Ranch or Nacho Cheese? See, Cool Ranch, or the stream's over. Just kidding.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm back and forth, and it depends on
it's a mood one thing day. For me, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
It is.
It says the 93 SV is 79 and the 70 is 49. 7-inch versus 9-inch, right? That's the only difference between the.
Yes. Yeah. Well, 7-inch, 9-inch, and then right now at the moment, the 93 on our website comes with GT54 Deucer, and that 73 won't.
Okay.
So you'd have to buy a Deucer. So you'll end up spending more money on that 7-inch to get the Deucer than you will if you went just with a 9-inch. So then you go on our website, thebasstank.com, and look at the UHD 93 that's on sale for $6.99. Comes with a Deucer.
Gabe says, if you did the live scope update and you don't like it, is there anything you can do? To... is that like unscrewing a light bulb versus a
pregnant? just wait it out here. I mean, surely in the next couple of weeks, we've been here in the next couple of weeks for a while, though. They'll come up with another update. So the update will be similar to this one. It's just going to fix if you're not having issues, then there's not a problem. Because the update that you have now, if you don't end up updating over time, it's just like a computer. You'll end up having functional problems with everything. So you'll have to update.
I don't know. This is an interesting question. Backlash. Is there anybody in the fishing industry from an electronic standpoint that you kind of look up to or would like to like pick their brain or just like talk things out?
Yeah. I mean, I got to go out with Mark Rose. He joined the Bass Tank team. So like we did a video on my YouTube where, but we didn't talk a lot in depth. We just talked some things, but you know, picking his brain about some of the old school, like he was on the forefront of that imaging and used it to dominate tournaments when guys weren't really using it. And it's been, there's some comparisons there about, you know, us getting on the forefront of the forward shooting sonar. So that's been very interesting. And honestly, I can't wait until I get to have a chance to go out with him on like a TVA and just let him watch him do his thing. I think I know what I know, but I'd like to just shut up and listen and watch him do his thing.
That's actually one that popped into my head. I just remember like there was a period at FLW, right, when they were going TVA and Mark was like dominant for a while there. Like,
and it was 100% because he was using his graphs to, you know, beyond what other people were using.
Yeah. And I think even KVD for a while, he was an early adopter of, you know, the initial hummingbird sign imaging. And I think he was ahead of the curve for a while. So there's been some people that really, you know, leveraged certain gates of technology as we went through them for sure.
Yeah. If someone was to say a bucket list fisherman as a whole, KVD would probably be the first one that came to my mind that I'd want to go out with and watch for a week, you know, watch them break down water and watch them fish.
Who?
KVD.
Yeah, never heard of him. Do you like the manual or do you like the, I guess, your live scope on the trolling motor, or do you like the standalone? Or did you talk about having one of each, or was that, maybe that was Jason Christie or somebody was talking about
Jason has a tour, yeah, he has one of each, but I have mine on my shaft, my trolling motor. And like that's because I like to chase fish.
Yeah, I'm a fish chaser. Scanning. Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like the standalones are much more popular in like the crappie world.
They are, and they're a lot more popular for like, if you know, like Jason has his setup. So if he's in a super windy situation, he can run his turret.
Right.
You cannot react fast enough with those. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how nice theirs is. There's not one out there that can react as fast as I can on the trolling motor to chase the fish. And so I want that mobility at all times. And I try to keep, for my personal setup, I try to keep it as simple as possible. I only have one unit on the front in my, on my bow. And, you know, it's because of simplicity to me. Yeah, it keeps me a lot more powerful than it being too overly complex.
And so when you have a single unit up front, is it like 100% full screen live scope? Or do you ever run like a sliver of 2D or a sliver of map? Or how do you set that up?
Yeah, so it's a 16-inch screen. So to be fair about that, it's a bigger screen. And 8616 allows me to build combos. And so I run live scope at the top. About two-thirds of my screen is live scope. Bottom left's mapping, bottom right is 2D with A scope running. A scope is like your old flasher, which is the most immediate information that even exists right now. You can't find anything that's going to get more information quicker than just the old school flasher. So I have it running all the time. And then when I want to, if I want to expand, if I'm going to be in an area and I'm going to be live scope for a while, I just touch the screen once and expands and the whole thing goes to live scope. And another touch of a button, it goes back into that combo, and I can go back into my mapping. Just a couple clicks of the button or the screen.
Now, we did talk about in the pre-show that you were considering maybe having 360 when you go up north, so then you would throw a Hummingbird up there for that.
Yeah, I've got one set aside for when I decide to go up north. I got two events up north, and I can see where that could be a real big benefit on some of those bigger flats with fish up on the bottom. And you know, in tandem with my live scope. That's not like I'm going to take off the live scope.
So from your perspective, when does 360 really shine?
Shell beds. When the weather's rocky and you need a spot lock. When you're in a situation where you got a lot of moving fish that are close to the bottom, for instance, like smallmouth, you know, up north. Mm-hmm. So in situations like that.
I think we talked about this earlier. Like, yeah, I mean, like your live scope in practice is like everything, right? There's a lot of times you're not casting at those fish in practice with the live scope, I assume.
I don't need to cast a fish in practice.
And that's partly because you've logged the hours that you're highly confident that you can tell that it's a crappie, a catfish, a sauger, a bass, right? By the way they're acting, their shape, like that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I will still cast a fish, but I'll also pull it away from them, you know, a lot of times instead of letting them bite it or, you know. But I'm not always live scoping in practice. I've spent a lot of time on my side and down imaging in practice.
Fair. Do you feel like your fish identification is just as good on side imaging as it is with front facing?
No, mine's not. I mean, I do understand, you know, the way fish are setting up to have a pretty good idea of it. But, you know, I'm gonna know a lot more on my live scope than I will on my down or side imaging.
This is an interesting question. Do certain baits stick out on live sonar better than others? And I guess when you're first starting out, would you say like a spoon is like the best training tool, or what kind of baits do you think are like,
yeah,
like an A-rig or like,
yeah, an A-rig would be the best during the wintertime, obviously, for sure. But that's going to give you you're going to be able to see a lot more, but probably the biggest thing I tell people, whether they want to listen or not, is to go actually get crappie fishing. Sure. You know, range in at 25 feet, get you a long rod, and don't set your depth or distance on auto. Lock it in and go around and get on some crappie and use that for orientation practice to drop a jig slowly on a crappie's head and watch how he reacts. Watch you spook him off. You know, learn how to, you know, if he's at 1 o'clock, be able to hit him, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, drop directly on him, whether he's 8 foot away or 14 foot away, to where every time you drop, you're dropping right on that fish. And then you kind of tuned in to be able to use that orientation. Like when I see a fish at, you know, at 10 o'clock and he's 70 foot out, I can hit him with a jerk bait if I want to, or underspin or swim bait or whatever I am. And a big fish at that distance, you know, for the most part, you got about two or three casts before he recognizes what's going on. And depending on what mood he's in, that will either turn him off or he, you know, he might go by it. But, you know, you're taking a chance if you're not accurate, is what I'm saying.
Sure. What do you feel like in, on average, normal situations where fish really start to get weary? Is it like 30 feet, 50 feet? Like, I mean, obviously certain lakes, more pressure, but just in general, like how close is too close normally?
On a big fish, 35 feet is I don't like to get closer than 35 feet to a big fish. Not that I haven't caught them closer and like run into the trolling motor and all that stuff. But, you know, so for the most part, if I'm anywhere near a pressured lake and I've got big fish in there, and the reason I keep on talking about big fish is because big fish, I believe that big fish feed more by sight than they use, than using their lateral lines or by anything else. I think smaller fish, they fish, it's just by watching their behavior over the last, you know, studying them, it just appears that that's what they do a lot more. So they're a lot more sensitive to those things. And I'm pretty much going to try to cast at them when they're about 70 feet away. That's my 60, 70 feet's my goal. If I pull them 20 or 30 feet close to the boat, I still got 30 or 40 feet away from the boat. If you cast them at 30 and you pull them 20, then they're only 10 foot away from the boat. By that point, they've probably noticed you. And the only way you're going to bite is that they're extremely aggressive fish, which is 1 out of 100.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah. So the bass tank, not the fish tank. You can take your boat there and have them look at your setup, I believe, right? Like you guys do like troubleshooting, they make an appointment, you bring it in, they like really do that kind of stuff, I assume. Or is that only stuff on, I mean, obviously it's not free, right? Like you make an appointment.
No charity events going on over here. You call in the bass tank, 918-509-7864, and talk with the sales reps, either Austin or Zeke will talk and kind of qualify everything that you're wanting and making sure you're, you know, that's the biggest thing. We don't want to upsell people, but we also want to make sure that they're actually getting what they need for the situation. We've warned them about, hey, if you're in this situation and you know, this may be a problem, or have you thought about this? We actually end up a lot of times talking people down from what they're wanting to buy or purchase. But as far as the install thing, then it goes to the shop and the shop schedules you in from there.
Cool. No, it's not. I always talk about that. I just like to reuse the cups. So, but I do like usually go to talk about at least once a week. It's like a guilty pleasure of mine. I know it's not good, but for some reason I enjoy it. It's weird. best day on the water that you can remember.
Man, I've had some good ones, guys. I don't know.
I was going to say, you've had a couple good ones on videos just in the last couple months, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, honestly, probably the last day of Harris Chain, the second NPFL that I won last year. Mm-hmm. You know, I caught 2 7.5s in the last hour or two. And one, they were both caught on video, but one was actually on live and the other one was recorded but just played later. You know, I ended up having, I think I had 22 pounds that day. Maybe it was a 23, somewhere in that range, but I think 22 pounds, I think is what I had. But it wasn't about the weight. I've caught 30 pound bags all the time, 35 pound bags playing around. It was the second win in three events and that whole thing. And man, if you go back and find that first 7 pounder that I caught, I mean, I scream out there. And that was 100% like a release of emotion. Like, I knew I was doing the right thing all day long. I knew I was doing what was right, but it wasn't paying off for the big fish. And when it finally did, it was like everything in me told me, like, yes, this is, you know, you got a chance at winning this tournament and, you know, it's going to happen. So that's probably my favorite day.
There's something about making those adjustments and getting the reward in a tournament that, like, turns it up. You know what I mean? Jeremy, good question. For those coming in late, I guess we didn't really, like, we've just been going hard on answering questions for like we've been talking all things fishing but heavily on electronics. We've got John Sukup from the Bass Tank coming on. He's definitely an expert in bass boat electronics, and we've just been hammering through questions. So if you guys came in late, there's a bunch of stuff to go back and listen to in the replay at your leisure. But that's what's going on tonight. And we appreciate John. And I guess I never asked you, John, do you have like a time limit tonight? Because we can don't feel like I'm holding you hostage here.
No, it sounds like we're getting hailed on outside, though. I don't know what's going on outside. We got a little thunderstorm going on with hail or whatever, but I think it's passed over. Nice. We're good.
Cool. Are you a HydroWave guy?
I used to be, but I'm not.
You think it's just like doesn't work, not necessary? Like, just what's your?
It's the same reason I don't use dye anymore on my plastics. I just have felt like I don't want to get where I feel like I have to have it, and if it's not, you know what I mean. I try to keep things simple. Listen, I was raised. We had a fish farm. I know fish would get conditioned to the noise of us walking up on the bank. They'd start feeding. So. I when I did have a HydroWave 5 years ago, it's probably been since I had a HydroWave, you know, I definitely made some sand bass school with it. I definitely used it when I was in dirty water around shallow grass. I felt like it really worked there. But so for the most part, I've just not had it on my new boat, and I just kept on winning and felt like I didn't need it. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Cool. Yeah. So what's your thought about, like, are there times, this may be a different way of saying this, are there times that you will shut off the electronics when fishing because you feel like the pinging is turning them off? Like, what do you look for? When is your decision to, like, you know, shut it down or minimize it? Or do you ever feel like you're over pinging the fish at times?
Yeah, I still shut off the back when I'm shallow. I'll shut off the back units, or at least transmit off so they're not getting any transmit. And very rarely I'm going to will I shut off the front one. It's got to be a situation where maybe if I'm sight fishing, there's no need for it. So I'll shut it off. You know, I want everything as clean as possible. Or if I'm extremely shallow and I know fish are going on the beds, I may do that. But honestly, the most time I shut it off is just me and my boy will go out and we'll say no sonar days and we'll go out fishing without the sonar. We're so focused on sonar all the time and because of business that my boy, you know, he's been in the boat with me. Well, 4 years ago when no one else knew what was going on with LiveScope, while we were out there trying to figure out how to do all these things with it, when there was no videos to learn, we're teaching ourselves. And sometimes in the summer, that's a hard day out there, you know, spinning circles trying to figure it out. So we came up with this thing where we call no sonar days, where he just likes, you know, he likes old school, take a Senko and a frog behind me and go fishing. So we'll shut them all off just to have fun and go fish, you know, fish shallow.
Yeah, there's some good content for sure. Like if you're enjoying what you're seeing tonight, and we talked about this earlier, maybe you came in late, but John's definitely been pumping out some high quality content on the Hookup with Sukup, his relatively new YouTube channel that's getting pretty good traction. I'm like, I checked it out. Like you got pretty good subscribers and view ratio for being a fresh channel. So that's been good. Brian, I'm pretty sure we talked about this earlier. John already has the new 34 transducer on the boat, right?
No, I don't have it on mine now. I got to play with it. Okay. We got to play with it. We had it. We put it on actually my partner's boat for a day. And that probably Sunday we'll drop that footage Sunday night of that day on the water fishing with it.
So when will you have it on the boat? Permanently, you think?
When everybody else gets it.
Oh, look at you playing fair.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take care of my customers first. I just happen to be now my number one customer. I'm just kidding. No, I'll make sure that I have it on there. And for real purposes, we put the new technology on as fast as possible because we want to know, you know, what the feedback is. Like my first reactions are usually what my customers' first reactions are.
Sure.
So there was actually some things that we found out on this day on the water. We spent the first 2 or 3 hours. I was pretty frustrated with it. Come to find out that not everything was updated correctly. Mm-hmm. And because it wasn't all updated correctly, it wasn't running as a new deucer. It was being returned kind of as an old deucer. And the older deucer was actually outperforming the new. So I was like, man, this is not good at all. But we figured that out. And boom, all of a sudden it was a new deucer. So that's mm-hmm. good feedback for us. That was why me and my partner went out there together. So when those phone calls come in, the first thing we're going to tell ourselves, guys, hey, you know, tell them to update, make sure the update's together or it's not going to work.
Nice. Big fish. I guess, is it like, I mean, I think the one thing is like live sonar seems to be like unlocking more bigger fish in certain times of the year at certain lakes. You spend a lot of time looking at them. Do you think it's a lot of like location they're away from? Are they suspended? Are they shallow? Are they to the like what?
Yeah, no, they're off. They're offshore, just like we all knew they were. If you were to just go offshore and just make a random cast, you're probably gonna, you know, hit on one in 100 days. Where live scope, you can get on top of them and actually make an accurate cast. And even when you hit on one, only 1 in 100 are going to bite. So, you know, just the odds are they're actually there now, and you got more people doing it. So it's just like the A-rig unlocked the suspended fish. It's the same fish that the A-rig unlocked, but now taking it another step further, we're actually able to put it on those big fish's heads. Yeah. You know, when a big fish gets up shallow, you know, in the water column, you know, that fish has got a strike range of 3 feet or whatever. If it's in a 2 foot of water, you land around a 6 foot ring and you can catch that fish. When he's in 100 foot of water and he's 20 or 30 foot down, his strike zone's only 3 foot. The percentage of that cast actually hitting his strike zone, it's just not there. And so that's what it is. We're just increasing our odds. We're putting the bait in the strike zone longer. That's all we're doing.
As far as like offshore, whether they're up or down, that's like a day to day thing, like hour by hour thing, I would assume.
Hour by hour. Yeah. Yep.
Rich bought a boat with Lowrance active target. Any like quick tips, like just like, is it factory setting? Go play with it. Go fish for some crappies. Like, is there any like quick tips you think for like setting it up?
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same advice that I give on any kind of forward choosing. Or don't run it on auto. Set your own depth settings. Set your own distance settings. Ranging closer at first. If you want to be stubborn and don't want to crappie fish, range between 45 to 60 feet. Practice around docks and around cover and structure that you know what it looks like, so you can understand that the screen, there is no left and right. If the fish is left of the pole, that means it's actually closer, not left. So, you know, learning your orientation, practicing your casting and orientation is extremely important to be proficient at this and actually make the most out of this tool that you have. So go out and go crappie fishing, you know, bring it in at 20, 25 feet and start from scratch there. I will also say, whether it's Active Target or Garmin, one of the biggest things you can do, guys, is just change your appearances, change your color schemes. You know, there's two or three that I use all the time. A lot of people want to go through different settings all the time, and they don't realize that you can just change your appearance, and those settings will perform differently on different appearances. So I have a color scheme that I want when I want the screen brighter. I got a color scheme that when I'm looking into wood or looking deeper. And I got a color scheme when I want the whole image to dull down a little bit because it's too bright. So I want to see separation from the fish to the cover. So a lot of guys like to run that old Lowrance blue. They're so used to that color that their eyes, it feels right. But I found on forward shooting sonar, whether it's Active Target or whether it's the live scope, it's the wrong color palette to use. Get away from using that color, that blue color. Get away from it.
You know, when you get that yellow-red return,
it's just not showing you the images that an amber or copper or black emerald will use. All these updates have all these other fancy appearances that color schemes that I have not found one that I like. So those are the three colors I use, the amber, copper, and black emerald.
Nice. Good stuff. Yeah. And that goes for like, even like side imaging, right? Like, I mean, just right. Like if you're new to down imaging, you're new to side imaging, like play with the color patterns, depending on the lake you're at, what looks, it's partly like lake to lake can be different. And user to user, right? Like what makes it pop for you may not pop for your buddy. So just because your buddy loves palette 3 doesn't mean palette 3 is best for you on your lake, right?
No. And like you said, hour from hour, a lot of it depends on light penetration, whether it's cloudy outside, whether it's sunny outside. It means a lot less. People think it's either dirty or clear water. Like that means a lot less. Turbid water is different. Okay. That's a different. You know, water with turbulence is different. Like that's a different situation because that can be clear or dirty anyways, but the particles moving through the water, you know, you can go into an area that's rocky and then you go into another silted area and a different color palette works on the same body of water within 30 minutes of each other. So at my console, I do run two units at the same time and I run different color palettes on both different units, intentionally for that. Cause I know that when I go through an area, one color palette may work better than the other.
Yeah, and like you have an algae bloom, or you get an area that's got high boat traffic, right? I mean, there's so many variables.
Yeah, algae bloom's a big problem for forward shooting sonar guys, and we're about to hit that time period where everybody's going to say, oh, all of a sudden, I can't see. Well, it's the algae bloom. It's getting it. So So be aware on the algae bloom. You see a lot less fish and a lot less jigs. People are always wanting to know where the jigs went, and the algae bloom got them.
Nice. Dustin says, if he just picks up his new boat and it's got active target, would you turn it on during the tournament if you've never used it before?
I mean, it depends on your personality. I would probably tell 9 out of 10 guys, don't even turn it on the first day of the tournament. We get so many guys calling us, rushing, wanting to buy because they got a tournament this weekend. And I think they're going to, and it's just like, that is not going to make you a good fisherman to turn that thing on the first time. But if you're the kind of guy that can say, hey, I'm only going to use it for the environmental factors, and I'm going to glance down on it every once in a while, then yeah, turn it on. You're going to be able to see some things right away, some cover and stuff like that. But if you think you're going to turn it on right away and then hit fish at 80 feet on the head, you got another thing coming and making them bite. That's you're not going to be able to compete with. You're not going to be able to compete that way. Not against other guys that are doing it. So
it's probably going to distract you from making good decisions and just like focusing on what you should be focusing on that day.
Yeah, you're going to spend 3 hours in a cove. It's going to feel like 10 minutes and you're not going to have caught a fish. You're going to be chased fish. You're going to be chasing a carp thinking it's a bass and stuff like that. So the best thing to do is go fish the spots you know. When you start catching fish, then scan over there and look at what's going on. If you're in a tournament, that is. And then in practice, the same way, you know, as a rule of thumb, side and down imaging, if you see a fish there, there's 10 times more fish or maybe even more than what's actually there. So if you go over a point and you see 5 dots down there, you know, there's probably more fish down there. So then get out there, but they're tight to the bottom, you know, they're bass, then get out there and look at them with your live scope a little bit and learn kind of the fish behavior. So, yeah. You know.
And that's good advice for any new, like if your first time 2D, your first time getting sign imaging, your first time getting mega, whatever, like go to a lake you know, go to a place you have confidence, look at the boat ramp, look at the rock pile you already know is there, look at the inside turn and the weed line and get comfortable. And that's going to help you down the road. Like get comfortable doing things before you start challenging yourself on the new stuff. That's always a good decision. Critical says the pallet was the best tip of the night, he said.
There we go.
Did you miss?
No, of course not.
You taking tips from Christy on shooting basketball? Or
Yeah.
Gator Adventure said he got the 93S VUHD for Christmas. Fishing charts versus nav charts. I see brush piles marked on the nav charts, but not on the fish charts.
Yeah, you want to run fishing charts. You want to run fishing charts.
So just don't worry about that and just run fish charts is your advice.
Run fish charts by the relief shading mat chip card. It's $199. And you will have all the information in the world you want. You'll have relief shading plus all those updates of different information. But that's the best way. But the fishing charts is going to be the one you're going to want to run.
Do you set your forward-facing transducer a click or two higher to see your baits hit the water?
Maybe. Send them.
Like you say it's situational maybe, or like maybe I don't want to talk about that is what you're saying.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
Nice. Have you ever seen a fish eat a topwater on live sonar?
Absolutely. Yeah, nice. It's amazing. Honestly, sometimes I'll look away from live sonar when I'm topwater fishing because I mean, it's amazing how far they'll come to eat it. You know, you just not expecting them to come up. So you kind of give up too fast, and, you know, than if you were just fishing over.
Nice. Getting trolling motor feedback on my live scope after putting a 3-bank charger on. Is it possible it's from the charger? It shouldn't be if the charger is not plugged. I don't know. Maybe not. So he seems to think he's getting, you know, he didn't have interference and he added a 3-bank charger and now he feels like he's getting interference.
Well, I mean, just the adding of the charger could be the problem. It could be the way it's all wired together as well. You know what I mean? So that's a hard one to answer without just seeing it directly. Especially if, like, once again, if they're not running any kind of power harness or anything like that. My answer to you would be get a power harness from the bass tank. Reinstall that power harness from there, make sure it's done correctly, with the breakers and make sure that everything is actually installed in that charger to the batteries the right way. I mean, a loose connection or not ground or anything like that could, you know, could cause that.
Dustin says, what's the best way to get valuable training on the water videos if you live 10 hours from Tulsa? I would assume John's hookup with Sookup videos would be good to watch. What other advice do you have for
is he talking specifically live scope?
I think he has active target on his boat, but
forward shooting sonar is forward shooting sonar when it comes to that. So you know, be honest with you, probably the best one out there doing the videos is probably Johnny Schultz, Fish the Moment.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
He's probably got the best content out there. We're gonna have a lot better stuff on our YouTube over the next year. So stay tuned on the Bass Tank stuff. The hookup with Sookup, I'll have there's a lot on mine as well. Mm-hmm. Not as detailed necessarily what we're talking about on the setting side of things, but as far as me talking about how the fish are behaving and reacting, which I feel like is the lost art in this whole thing. This is the difference between me and some other guy that just knows electronics. There's a lot of guys that know electronics better than I do, is the ability to understand how fish behave and then combine the two together. And if we just overly talk about electronics too much, we forget that the guys that are dominating are the guys that actually know how to catch fish, period. So that's kind of what I like to do, is bring it back a little bit to the roots of understanding the fish behavior and how that actually applies to what I'm seeing on the electronics. I feel like that's more important than a lot of these other details. That's why you hear me say, how to get better, go practice orientation. I mean, you know, accuracy to me is more important than just wandering around everywhere and deciding whether that's a bass or not, because you might find out that's a bass, but if you can't hit it, it doesn't even matter. So,
and that goes back to, like, even without live scope, right? Like, whether you're Mega 360 or whether you were side scanning, marking a boulder, can you get 20 yards away from it? Can you line up and hit it? Right. And like, you know, things like that to me, like, you know, like, I think one of the things I tell people on the channel is, like, the directional pucks are something that people overlook as a fundamental tool that can vastly, you know, for $200, you can add this.
No, you have to have it on your
right. But like a lot of people, like, they get all this other stuff and all these big screens and they don't have a generic puck. And it's like, you're missing the boat. Like, you should have gotten the puck. That was way more valuable than the 16 inch screen. Right. Like, so there's things like that. If you can't hit where you need to hit, then it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah. He's talking about the point one on the Lowrance, or if you're talking about the heading sensors on your garments, stuff like that, then yeah, it's a big, 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 big deal. And I don't know if you guys haven't done it. I mean, on your side and down, whether we're talking, if you don't have forward shooting sonar, we're just talking about side and down. If you haven't practiced going out, setting a waypoint, going beyond that, turning the boat around, coming back to it, get on the trolling motor, dropping the trolling motor, and first cast hitting what that object was that marked, then you haven't trained yourself to be able to use those tools like you should be able to. And I was doing that in 09. I met Ben Park at National Championship in Florida, Bass Nation, and in 2009. So like by the end of that year, so by 2010, I went out there and we did hummingbird training and I went and I learned from him. And these were some of the basic things that he first taught back then. So a lot of what I do with the Bass Tank now came from that experience with Ben, with him training me. So that was just,
yeah. And I remember
10 years ago,
I made my first weekend series national championship and they had like a free, I forget the guy. It was one of the guys down there that did kind of the, you know, we're talking about the same time he was doing, like, you know, this is the training. And he was like, yeah, that was like, he hammered that down. Like, you idle over a brush pile or a boulder, you mark it, you turn around, you like learn how to hit that mark. And like, I took that and like, and then like, for me, I was okay at it. But once I put that heading sensor puck with my hummingbirds, I was like, this is a game changer for hitting that stuff.
Yeah.
But, and this thing is like, if you're not comfortable doing that, right, side imaging, marking things, hitting it, don't invest in live scope, right? Like, if you like get some of those fundamentals down probably and get comfortable and then add it on, right? Because I think that's the thing, is like, a lot of people think like I don't catch fish, but if I get live scope, I'm gonna be John Suckup tomorrow, right? But the thing is, like, you still got to put the work in. You still got to, like, there's fundamentals that got to be in place for all of this stuff.
Yeah, I've got a lot of hours behind that thing. A lot.
Yeah. Cool. Taylor, yes, you can make trails on Google Earth, and you can mark things in port, but it's slightly different depending on the unit or the brand. So there are some good videos on how to do that. I could tell you how to do it on a hummingbird. But yes, it is possible to get stuff on Google Earth, bring it in, and drop it in your units. And it's just a slightly different process depending on the brand, right? I mean, they'll have their own little intricacies. But and you typically need some kind of third-party software to convert it to the right type of for your unit. Well, man, I feel like we've caught up on questions. We've been on almost 2 hours and 10 minutes, and we've spent 2 hours, like, literally answering everybody's questions, which I think has been awesome. Like, I feel like it's been good. I enjoyed it, John. I appreciate it. Like, you spend the time and shared a ton of information for people. I don't know, is there anything else you want to cover or anything you want to point out or talk about before we kind of wrap things up?
No, man, I enjoyed it. Sorry for putting my game face mode on and getting serious. but yeah, I was trying to listen and try to answer those things as detailed as possible. So hopefully it helps people out. And I mean, the biggest deal is don't be intimidated by the technology at all. It's not that difficult at all. Technology now has advanced to the point where if you don't see it, it doesn't exist. I mean, you can almost treat it that way.
Sure.
There are some things that more advanced guys can see than just the average guy, but it's good enough now that you can take it out and become a better fisherman with the technology that we have now. And I think that as long as that's your goal, is to become a better fisherman, learn more about and love, like me, just love figuring the fish out. If you're that guy, then that's what technology does for you. I mean, it's helped me tremendously in learning, you know, the fish behavior.
Everything that I thought
wasn't always true, and a lot of things I did think were true. So, but just actually having the exclamation point or the period at the end of that knowledge, it means a lot to me, and I know it will mean a lot to everybody else too.
Yeah, I'm excited. I don't know, like, my boat's going to probably be ready in early May. I'm going to get it set up for the dual mounts. I'm going to wire it so there's going to be a dual mount. I'm probably not going to have the live scope or the front facing right away. I've already got the Mega 360, so I'll start with that. And then I'll probably, before the end of the year, I plan to probably add a live front facing unit before I put shallow water anchors on it. Cause I think that's the way, I mean, there's money, you know, it's going to catch me more fish, I think, that than talons or power poles. No, but they're in the long range plan, but I'm going to try to prioritize this time for that. So I'm excited. Yeah, so I'm excited also to follow along, see how this murderer's row of four tournaments coming up for you, and I look forward to following along and see you whack them like you usually do, John.
I hope so, guys. It's a deep breath kind of thing. Get ready. Here it comes.
Awesome. Well, cool. Well, I'm going to let you go, John. You gave more than enough time. It's been awesome. If you guys enjoyed anything you saw tonight, you know, reach out to the Bass Tank, see what they got to offer. There's a lot of good things going on there, and I appreciate you giving your time. I'm going to hang on for a few more minutes and answer a few more questions and cover a few things, but I'm not going to drag you into that, John. So I appreciate you coming on tonight. It's been awesome, and it's good catching up with you after hanging out in the boatyard back in 2014.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Thanks, John. All right. Cool, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I got a couple other things I wanted to cover tonight for the 90 of you that are still hanging out, which is awesome. I hope you enjoyed the show. A couple things. Thank Arsenal again. If you guys didn't see this today, I want to point this out. Omnia has a deal going on that's pretty sweet. Let me share my screen here quick. And this is like free money. it's not shameless promotion. My screen is locked up all of a sudden. What's going on? Did my computer just crash? What's going on? Feels like the computer is locked up. All right, what is? Jump on my mobile device. Did we just crash? Did we come back? Are we back? All right, we're back. Never mind. Crisis avoided. That was weird. Yeah, so pretty much as Daniel is saying in the comments, you pretty much get premium free for a year. My computer's lagging a little bit here. Man, what's going on? There it is. But basically, I got it posted on my Facebook page. I think I shared it to my Instagram. But basically, there's no code, but right now through Tuesday, if you buy the premium package for $29.99, you get a $30 instant digital credit. I think it took like 40 minutes to get it back. So you basically, for free, get the Omnia membership, which comes in with 1 year. You get the $30 back. You get 10% back on all future purchases. free shipping, no minimum order size, and an exclusive deal. So I just want to point that out. I know a lot of you guys already shop at Omnia. If you're not a premium member, this is a great time to jump on it. If you already have the premium membership, all it does is extend you for a year. Excuse me. And so if you've already got 6 months left or a year off or whatever, Dustin, it should extend you basically 1 year for free. So it's kind of a no-brainer if you shop for tackle. Sean says he called Omnia, got confirmation existing members premium will kick in when the old membership basically extends 12 months. So there you go. That's one thing I wanted to highlight tonight. You know, and then you get that $30 back. They've got all that stuff in the bargain bin right now. They've got flatworms. They've got DT6s, DT8s, DT10s, Z-Man stuff. They've got a bunch of stuff already marked 20% off. So you can get a free $30 back and then go spend it on a bunch of stuff. And then you can, you know, as Daniel points out, if you use my code, 15% plus 10% reward back is pretty much 23.5% back on all your purchases, which is pretty good. I will tell you, they are changing things up on the program for discounts. So I think my code, I think a lot of you guys have been using them multiple times per month. I think they're changing starting April 1st that my code will only work once. Per month. So just plan ahead. Instead of buying like three small orders per month, you might just want to group things together a little more. But also, I think my code is still, you can use it multiple times the rest of March. So you might want to use that code. And then it'll be once per month after that. So that's going to be changing. I just wanted to point that out so you guys don't get blindsided by that. I think some of the other creator codes like Brian and Punch, you can only use once per month, but mine, you guys have been able to use multiple times, so that's going to change. They're closing that loophole on us here. What else I want to touch on? Oh, I got this package from Sycamore. I don't know if he's still on here, but I wanted to open this quick. Let's see, there's Sycamore. I scribbled all this. He sent me something. We were talking on Instagram. I don't remember whose live was, but we were talking about something. He's like, oh, I want to send you something. So he's getting the old battle braid scissors out. I'm going to see what Sycamore sent me. Kind of a, we'll call the listener viewer mail call. And what they said is they want to encourage people to order slightly larger orders because they felt like they were really getting hammered on shipping when people were using the discount plus their premium. And so they're just encouraging people to maybe just buy slightly bigger orders so they don't get hammered on shipping as much. It's kind of the logic behind it. So let's see what's in here. All right. So, oh, awesome. So we got a couple of, this one's kind of falling, skirts falling off these, but he sent me several Hildebrandt, the Blade spinnerbait. So these were made of, I believe these are tin heads. And they have a really unique shape with gill patterns and the high-quality Hildebrandt spinnerbait blades. And so they're one of my favorite spinnerbaits. Like, before I ever got excited about Bassman, these were, like, my go-to spinnerbaits. So he sent me a handful of these heads, which are pretty awesome, and they're hard to find. They don't – supposedly Yakima is making these, but I haven't seen them. So I've got a handful of these, which I will re-skirt. Thank you very much, Sycamore. These are awesome. My favorite finesse clearwater spinnerbaits up here. So that's there. And then, oh, this is in. sent me a Marlboro box, but there's actually a crankbait in here. I was like, oh, geez, is there a couple smokes in here or what's going on? He actually sent me a Bagley. That's pretty sweet. And this is a, which version is this? I want to say this is like a DB2 or a DB3. I'm not an expert on my Bagleys. Maybe Sycamore, if you're watching this later, if you know which version this is, but this looks really similar to the one that I threw down in practice on the Washita River and caught a couple nice bass, including a giant gar on it. But this is a, I think this has the good hook hangers on it. So I think this is an older vintage Bagley that's the juice. So that definitely will go in the balsa box. We'll set it up here for now, but that'll go in the balsa box. KB2, says Tim. Killer B2. That sounds right. And then... there's another blade with a double, an Indiana-Colorado combo. Oh, I got a note from Sycamore. Hope you can clean these up and put them to good use. I also include an old crankbait you might like. Awesome. Thank you, Sycamore. Thank you very much. That's awesome. We'll have to freshen up the skirts on these and then bring them back on the stream again once they're all fixed up. That's awesome. Truly appreciate it. They're not tin rollers. They're actually called the blade. The tin roller had more of like a rounded head. The blade has a much like skinnier, thin head. I had some of the tin rollers. These are slightly different. Cool. So I was like, what else is that? Is there anything else in the agenda? Any other questions? Oh, schedule coming up. The next 2 weeks, I'm traveling for work. So we probably will not have a Wednesday or Thursday night stream the next 2 weeks. I think maybe if I can work it out, maybe I'll do a Santa Cooper Sunday final day watch party on Sunday as a makeup stream for you guys. And then maybe like a Red Crest stream on the following Sunday. So we might do some weekend streams the next 2 weeks, just because I got 2 weeks of work in a row. And then I'll look the first week of April to get back on the Wednesday kind of regular stream schedule. That will be coming up. I reached out to sent Gary Dobbins an email today, hoping to get him scheduled on here. But otherwise, we'll book some good guests. Leave a comment in the video if you're watching the stream. Really, what kind of guests you guys want to see? We'll get them on. No, the code does not give you a discount on the premium membership itself, John. That's true. But once you have the membership, you can use my code, and then you get the 10% rewards back on top of the 15% off code. When will you spill the beans on the new boat? I'm going to wait until I have the boat in my possession and we will like receive it together. I'll get that video out. I'll try to get it out like the same week that I get it, and I'll turn that around really quick. So that's the plan. How far are we from ice out? Well, the ponds around here are definitely getting really gray and they're starting to get a little strip of water on the edges of them, but the lakes still, I think people are still ice fishing this weekend. But it is pretty good forecast warm. I think if we get some warm weather and some rain, what are we, March 17th, 18th right now? I think I saw Kate Laufenberg post. He was out on the river already down in La Crosse, caught a couple bass. So the river is about to open up in places. But I would say we're probably 2 or 3 weeks out from most of the lakes in the metro in Minnesota to be open. There you go. Minimum use codes. We could do I'll give some feedback. It's probably hard to write that into their system and algorithm, but that would be an idea. That would be cool. We'll see if we can talk him into some giveaways. Dustin's going to get his boat before me. There you go. Should work on a partnership with the bass tank. AJ, now in Nebraska, said he caught his first bass yesterday. It's very nice. Nick's being a Debbie Downer and saying it's going to be at least a month before ice out. Dustin says he's 3 hours south of Prairie and they're wide open. Well, that's but 3 hours, like Prairie's like 3 hours south of me, so that's like 6 hours south of where I live. Cool. So that's coming up. So just be patient, watch the community tab on the YouTube channel as well as my Instagram stories, and I will keep you updated when the streams will. But for the next 2 weeks, there's not likely to be a Wednesday, Thursday night typical stream. I'll try to mix them in on the weekends and then get some regular videos out. So that's kind of the what's going on in the channel. I feel like I want to keep this like commemorative box from Sycamore. You think like nicotine tobacco scented Killer Bee 2s are like the thing? Like, is it like coffee scent? But it's like, I don't know. Or am I just sort of wasting my kids aren't asking me why I have a cigarette pack in the basement in my office? But all right, I think we covered everything. Yes, safe travels. Eric's up. I think you're up in the Grand Rapids, which is like 3 hours north of me, and they're still driving on the lakes up there. So maybe I'm being optimistic in the 2 to 3 weeks down here in the metro. But ice out is when the ice all melts in your cocktail. Latell. But 224. Enjoyed everybody. I see what you did there, Rich. I see what you did there. But thanks for everybody tuned in. As you remember, definitely we talk about watching the replays and catching up and listening to the podcast. But this one for sure, I think, is worth listening to back. I mean, we've had some really good ones, but like there was a lot of nuggets if you're into electronics and things like that. Make sure you catch that. Otherwise, we're going to wrap this up and stay tuned for more content. And as always, I appreciate you guys. Appreciate all the comments, the interaction, the members, all that stuff. And as always, here to help you guys catch more big bass and suck less. As always, thanks to all of you that hung in till the end of this podcast. This has been another episode of the Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast Experience. Please consider sharing this with any of your bass and buddies and friends. This is the best way for podcasts to grow is through word of mouth. Also, don't forget to search Hellebass on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, or just about anywhere else so that we can connect in more ways. As always, here to help you catch more bass and suck less.